Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, this is so much fun. I love Thursdays. I really love Thursdays because something is evolving here. Something is incredibly special that's happening here. We have this gathering, which I call the world's greatest doctor panel. And it is, we started with Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Brian Artis, Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Jim Thorpe. We added our data expert, John Cullen, who created the Johns Hopkins COVID map. And we have other folks that are joining us. Last week, we had Brandon House with an unbelievable talk, everything from ancient Babylonian religions, cults, the globalists, the philosophy of why they think we're all going to die and why they think they have to, you know, kill 5 billion people to save us all. It was a fascinating show. Let me just get that back again. I got people logging in, so I'll make your lines live as soon as I just sort of vamp here a little bit. And where'd it go? Somebody left. Don't hang up. Call back. You were doing fine. All right. So let me just make sure I get that's Tiffany's line. Okay. So I got Tiffany here. And Tiffany and I were joking off the air. She doesn't know anybody with a normal name. I don't think I do either. Although I was chatting with there we go. Make that one live. There we go. I was sort of joking around a bit. Oh, wait, where'd it go? This is crazy. All right. I'll tell you what. I'm trying to do two things at once. When you produce your own show, I got my left hand on the keyboard, got my right hand on the mouse, and I'm talking at the same time. This is probably not a smart thing to do. So we'll start with Tiffany's line, make her live. And first of all, thank you. Thank you for bringing such wonderful people to my show. I really appreciate it. How you doing? Tiffany?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, a great time. All right. So we got one more person here. Let me see who our other I don't recognize this number. Nope, that's Mo Van Hoek, which I probably mispronounced too. So I'm going to let me make Mo's line live. And so you can tell me how to pronounce your name. Like I say, we were joking about this a little bit earlier. It takes us a few minutes to get going here. Mo, welcome to the show.
Yeah, no worries. This is actually it's Mo Van Hoek, kind of like Captain Hook. I know that E throws people off, but it's Mo Van Hoek.
It does. Mo Van Hoek. Okay, good. And same thing. I was talking to Bailey, and apparently her name isn't Kuykendall, it's Kirkendall. So you guys, we got to get our names straight here. Bailey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
All right. So we're going to talk some serious legislation. In fact, I've gone over some of my own citizen bills, and I discovered something. I have to give everybody a huge mea culpa because we were talking about getting rid of the emergency use authorization and the declaration of emergency. And what I had forgotten, because I don't read all my own bills all the time, is that my bill to get rid of, to put full vaccine product liability on the manufacturers includes a section that gets rid of the declaration of emergency. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. Let me welcome John Cullen to the show, who has the world's best microphone. He's terrible. He sounds better than me. John, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good
I want your
be
voice.
Here.
I want to borrow your voice sometime. You know,
you can borrow the microphone.
Like, exactly. Well, you're more the Dennis Prager end of the radio scale. You know, and I figure my show is 10 times more valuable because I put 10 times more words into a show than he does.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, good morning. Good to be here again. Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you being here every week. I mean, it's just you're a regular part of the crew. In fact, we're going to draft Tiffany into being a weekly person if I can as well. I think this is her third appearance here. Jim Thorpe, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on your show again. Good morning, John Cullen, and good morning, Tiffany, and good morning, our new guest.
So I'm going to have everybody
morning.
Go. Good morning. Yeah. Let me do the traditional ringing of the Wuhan gong to get us going here to bring our meeting to order here. And where is it? There it is. In honor of the myths that this thing probably came out of a North Carolina lab, but we'll figure it out at some point someday. So what we usually do to start things off, everybody kind of takes a few sentences to introduce himself. And that's why everybody knows who everybody else is. And then as we get going, the more you folks want to interact with each other, the better. Ask each other questions. You're from different areas. We've got legislative specialists. We've got doctors. We've got data with John. Everybody's got something different to offer. And so because of that, of us gathering people with different expertise together, the crossover can be really incredible. And so I want you to feel free to talk to each other as much as you want. I'm happy to sit back and just kind of, you know, ask my occasional impossible question. So I'll start with the order that you called in. John Cullen, if you want to enter and sign in, please.
Good morning. I'm John Cullen, and my background is about 34 years ago when I worked at Oracle. I was the lead on a project to build a mapping system that's being used today by Johns Hopkins and the World Health Organization to map the pandemic. And back in March of 2020, I noticed that the mapping system wasn't being used correctly. And I called attention to it and started to publish a whole bunch of materials highlighting how the pandemic was being portrayed improperly, would be the way I put it. So that's my background. And I've been researching this since March of 2020, and I'm a data expert.
Yeah, no kidding. The stuff that John's comes up with is absolutely staggering. And it's like the real weight behind a lot of our initiatives. So I'm hoping to get John connected with, if you aren't already, Tiffany, Bailey, and Mo, so that you folks can you know, exchange information and use the data to back up, you know, what you're doing with legislation. Bailey Kirkendall, welcome to the show. Enter and sign in, please. I feel like a game show.
Thank you.
So much fun.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're loud and clear.
Okay, you got it. I'm Bailey Kirkendall. I'm just a citizen activist, I guess you could say, but I also work full-time for a nationwide nonprofit called Stand for Health Freedom, where we're helping everyday people do their civic duty of speaking and writing to their legislators alongside educating people on their health freedom rights. And then, excuse me, I work with Mo and Tiffany here in the state of Florida. We are actively trying to make change in the state of Florida, making health freedom really the state, hopefully would be the last state standing if it came down to it, as a health freedom hub. So we work a lot in educating people and also working in legislation.
Cool. Next we have Jim Park. Jim. Oh, that's great. No, this is fascinating. This way I get to know you all too. So this is incredibly helpful. Jim.
Oh, good morning, and welcome, Bailey and Mo, and good to hear from you again, Tiffany and John and Greg. You have a pretty good radio voice too. So,
well, thank you. Well, that's why I'm not an Olympic pole vaulter. I had to do something, you know, with my whatever talents you have. You got to, you know, you go where it goes. But yeah, I'm just glad I do have a radio voice. If I sounded like some of the other folks on radio, I'd be really, you know, hard pressed. It does help. It does help to do that. But I just want John's microphone. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, work on that. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
You know, you really have, both you and John have brilliant radio voices. You kind of remind me of the host of, Lake Wobegon up there. What's his name?
Garrison Keillor, where all the children are above average in voice. What's the Matter You, Wisconsin.
The only way you guys really differ from Garrison is you not only have you have a voice, but you also have TV faces. So you guys are
TV faces.
That's very kind.
For radio.
Thank you.
Oh,
I've been trying to hide my face.
Yeah, no, that's why I do radio.
Much better. As a matter of background, my name is Jim Thorpe. 43 plus years doing, serving, taking care of my pregnant moms, my fetuses in the womb, and my women of reproductive age, and also a great concern for my progeny, my offspring of my women who are pregnant. So for 43 years now, I've been a very, very busy. I'm board certified in obstetrics and gynecology. I'm also board certified in maternal fetal medicine. I have published extensively, mostly clinical research of pertinent clinical questions that I've had throughout my career. I've reviewed for the medical boards. I actually examined for the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology for at least a year back in the late 90s or mid 90s. I served on the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. I've testified in Congress, in Senate, at the behest of the Bush administration in 2003 as an expert witness for fetal therapy, fetal treatment of the fetus as a patient in the womb. But most recently, I consider myself an expert in COVID-19. I qualify. I published extensively in the last few years. My main focus is really twofold, and I'll be bold and outright. We've all called for a ban, worldwide ban, and cessation of the moratorium on the use of the COVID-19 injections in pregnancy in the whole world. There's many of us. I called for that 2 weeks ago, and that's been broadcast all over, number one. And number two, my second area of a dog on the pant leg of the establishment is I will not back off from the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology because they have broken the golden rule of pregnancy. They have damaged thousands, maimed, killed, and really hurt literally millions of women of reproductive age and pregnancy around the world because of their stance and their completely breakdown of the golden rule of pregnancy. So those are my two areas which I will continue to aggressively push.
Yeah, you have an amazing background, and my newer folks who, I think it was Bailey who said, you know, just a citizen activist, there's no such thing as just in anything on this show, and there's some folks with incredible titles and incredible accomplishments, and we're still on a first-name basis, so we get pretty casual, and that's why I think we actually get a lot more information accomplished, because, so don't, whatever you hear, it's just, I mean, Jim's amazing, but doesn't mean you can't ask him a tough question. I do all the time. So we're all, you know, we all do what we do best. And that's why we're here. Tiffany, you want to enter and sign in, please, and tell your story?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on again, Greg. My name's Tiffany Prado, and I am also a citizen advocate. I have experience in marketing and communication strategy, and I work with Mo and Bailey state of Florida to help keep Florida free. And I also work with Dr. Jim Thorpe on the My Cycle Story Project, which is a deep investigation in how the COVID vaccines are affecting women's menstrual cycles.
You know, I was just thinking, Tiffany, I meant that when I said that earlier, that if you want to be a permanent part as many times as you can take part in this regular gathering, I'd love to have you. You know, because
thank
your
you.
Insights and oh, you're welcome. Your insights invaluable, and I still like the fact that you have a degree in manipulation. You got to use that line
yeah.
more often. That, I want a bumper sticker in that or something to that effect. But that's very cool. Mo Van Hook, welcome to Action Radio. Why don't you enter and sign in our panel?
Yes, thanks so much. So just a little background about me. I actually am a mom to two beautiful teenage boys, and one of my two children unfortunately suffered multiple strokes a little over 12 years ago from his childhood vaccines. And so I learned the hard way what the devastating effects can be when you vaccinate your child. So I spent a lot of time and I got really activated, I want to say a few years later, trying to educate people, just literally walking into people at the grocery store that I saw had a baby just to let them know, hey, listen, you know, make sure you're getting full informed consent. You understand the risk associated with the vaccination process just as the potential benefits because it really can be a game of Russian roulette. And I would do that and then, you know, kind of walk away and say, God bless. But I just wish somebody had maybe had tapped me on that shoulder because my mommy gut was telling me something was wrong, something wasn't right. And I was very apprehensive, but I was treated like I was a helicopter mom. I was treated like I was you know, just off my rocker and that I was potentially, you know, putting my child at risk by not vaccinating. So, you know, probably about 2015 with the formation of a wonderful group called Health Freedom Florida, a grassroots organization that really does focus on getting, you know, information out to the public specific to the state of Florida, you know, what's transpiring there. And so we've got, you know, Bailey and Tiffany that are on there with us, and we partner with some national as well as global organizations. Of course, Stand for Health Freedom, which is that incredible digital advocacy platform that Bailey works for, has been an incredible asset to us for constituents here in Florida to be able to get easy access into communicating with their legislators. We partner also with National Vaccine Information Center that has, you know, decades and decades of knowledge about legislation to help support some of the language that we've established and built to present to legislators, which I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about hopefully today.
Oh, yeah.
And,
we got 3 hours here. We got lots of time to hash these things out. And because I want to learn as much from you folks about what you're doing. As I do want to tell you what we're doing at Action Radio. So, yeah, there's a lot to accomplish here. What was that first organization you mentioned before Stand for Health Freedom? You had another one that you're part of.
Sure. There's a National Vaccine Information Center. It's headed up
by
Barbara Lowe Fisher. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stand for Health Freedom. Then you have Physicians for Informed Consent, Children's Health Florida. But we are Grassroots Health Freedom Florida.
Yeah.
That's Stand for Health Freedom. Okay, good. Just want to keep all these together. All right. Barbara Lowe Fisher, I've heard that name before. She's been doing this for a while, hasn't she?
Yes, well over 30 years.
I thought so.
She's been exceptional mentor to all of us.
Well, let's get her on the show. Let's bring her onto the panel
if
she has time. Yeah. Now, I remember my daughter was born mid-90s, and she's not now, but I remember, that there was a vaccine huge concern then. In fact, this is out in California, and they had Kaiser, and they actually, against my future ex's direct orders, gave her a hepatitis B shot. And I said, specifically, do not do that. And we looked at all the vaccines. We're thinking of getting some. I think it was the MMR and the DPT, the old traditional ones, right? And that was seemed like the best thing to do at the time. Now I wouldn't do any vaccine of any kind. Especially after listening to Judy Mikovits for 5 minutes. The fact that they gave her something that I specifically ordered them not to do, we left. I mean, I said, we're out of here. Give me the papers right now. We are leaving your health plan. You violated the most basic thing I told you not to do. You did it anyway because you wanted to. I said, we're out of here. And this is Kaiser. I don't mind mentioning their name because, as far as I'm concerned, that at that point they became a criminal organization. And it's like, why the hell did you do that? Well, she might, the doctor said, well, she might sit on a needle on a bus one day. And my daughter was 2. Really? You're worried about this, in her teenage years? Well, that's really big of you. But no, so at that point I realized that this was kind of crazy. But what I want to ask you about, in fact, everybody, is that vaccines have been a concern before this. I remember in the 90s, this was a big concern. Now, was this just California where I was in the Bay Area, or was this national? I mean, what was going on here in Florida? I only got here like 5.5 years ago. But this was, all the doctors, the progressive doctors, the informed doctors, the equivalent of you folks here, like the Ben Marbles, the Jim Thorpes, the Judy Mikovits, Brian Artis, those folks, were still telling people don't get vaccinated back in the 90s. Did something happen to that? Did that disappear? Was the warning not strong enough? Was it only where I was in California? I'm going to ask Tiffany and Bailey about that too. But Mo, what do you know about that? Because you had kids, that were, I guess, a little older, or they're born later.
A little bit later. But I know they haven't deviated or changed. They've been out there staunchly, passionately, relentlessly pursuing, getting that truth out to people about the vaccines and the number of vaccines. I think, what I will tell you, yes, absolutely vaccine injury and death occurred well before, right? It's been occurring for decades. And I just think there was this understanding, the mentality I think a lot of doctors have is, well, and, I do this in, quotations, it's only one in a million, right? So statistically, they look at it like, well, if we're saving 10,000 and sacrificing one, it's okay. I don't believe we should sacrifice anyone.
Yeah, unless you're the one.
And that's why,
wait, what happened to if it saves one life, it's worth it? What happened to the gun control argument? it's amazing how they adapt, when it suits their purpose.
Yes, or exactly. Yeah. It's a shift. I think my husband walks around with a T-shirt that says just one word, hypocritical. He said it's just the world we live in now.
Oh, yeah. It's a lifestyle, yeah.
But I do believe, you know, with the implementation of social media, with the I don't know where we were last week, but I brought this up at the homeschool convention actually a few weeks ago, where I said, I know it sounds crazy to many people, but for me, when the plandemic hit, I considered it a huge opportunity, because we knew that the tower of these cards were going to start crumbling, because all the data and all the information we were sharing about how the efficacy isn't there, the safety isn't there, how the childhood vaccination schedule has never been safety tested. They've never been able to verify the true efficacy of these things. The studies that were done weren't long-term studies, but, you know, short few week periods of time. All of that was going to be unraveled, and it was going to be seen by the larger populace. So for the first time ever, we were actually putting vaccines on the global front. And I think that ushered in a massive amount of people. And I know that the conversation was really focused around the COVID shots, but the reality is that none of those other shots have done any of the required safety testing as they deem it to be under this golden standard. So I think a multitude of things, and in the fact that we've had some true advocates out there for decades, you know, continuing to keep. And what's interesting, too, is these people have been attacked. They have been threatened. And yet they stand out there still on principle and truth. And we're grateful for their participation and support.
And now they're on the show. We have some of those folks. Yeah, I was never attacked or threatened, but I've been censored horribly since I came out March 2nd of 2020 saying this is all a hoax. We have cures, we have treatments, you don't need a vaccine, this is ridiculous. And ever since then, you know, I mean, I've been slammed on social media by big tech, which is why I wrote a bill against them. You might be
Greg.
Yeah, we've gotten pretty big skin, me, Bailey, and Tiffany now, because I've had people wish, you know, and this is well before COVID, having, you know, wish our children will get, you know, death and disease, you know, want to report us, want to, you know, do a lot of different things to make our lives difficult. But it's a line in the sand, and we're going to stand there staunchly.
Well, I want to talk about a citizen legislative convention at some point in Florida for all of us citizen activists, and bringing our doctors and everybody else as well. Jim, did you have a comment? You want to jump in here? And then I want to get to Tiffany and Bailey.
Well, Greg, I have a confession to make.
You
misrepresented me a little bit, and I need to come clean with
What did I do?
Well, it's a confession. It's a personal confession. You know, I need to come to Jesus and repent. Bailey and Mo and Tiffany, I don't want to give them the wrong impression. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, and you lumped me into the people that had their eyes opened up. And I was a moron. I did not have my eyes opened up. I was steeped into academia, into buying everything that was published in the mainstream medical journals and contributing to it. And I was totally blind. And I had I have a brilliant oldest daughter who's probably Tiffany's age, who was the rebel in of my three daughters. And between her and my oldest brother, they slowly brought the truth to me. So it hasn't only been for about, you know, I pushed a lot of vaccines, even in pregnancy. Specifically, I pushed the influenza vaccine because I thought the data was there to support it.
That's why you fight so hard against them now, Jim. This is why you fight so hard against it. Okay, this is exactly the reason. Because you were lied to. I don't think you were ignorant or you were stupid or anything. I think you were just lied to. And without counter evidence, you wouldn't necessarily think that you're being lied to.
But the fact of the matter is I was dead wrong. Okay, I was dead wrong. And so I feel a little bit of guilt over, you know, when I hear the horrible stories of so many young, beautiful parents, and my eyes have been open. And I have a lot of shame and guilt over not having my eyes opened up 30 years ago, you know, instead of 10 years ago.
Yeah, but they're open now. Jim, they're open now. You're doing such good work. Don't worry about it. You can't change that. You know, don't beat yourself up for what you can't change. Just change as much as you can. You know, I mean, how could I have heard action radio 30 years ago? I don't know. I mean, the technology is necessary now. But, you know, we all make mistakes. And I really believe, you know, that's the whole point of redemption and forgiveness. You got to forgive yourself, too. And just do what you do and keep doing what you do and stay healthy so you can do it for a long time.
And Jim, thanks so much for sharing that. An incredible statement to have made, and we appreciate you and we really value everything that you're doing today to help. Right, we all joined into this at some form because we recognized, right, by the gift of Jesus that we came to light about what's transpiring, and I truly believe that everything that we're doing is really guided by Him, and we're all meant to help save this next generation, and everything that we're doing now is guided in that, and I think that's why we're so passionate about it.
That's a huge point. And to get all to know your voices, Bailey, Tiffany, and Mo, if you just give your first names when you're talking, just so we get them straight. I know John's voice and I know Jim's voice really well. Mine's probably pretty
interesting
too.
That was Mo, by the way.
that was Mo. Okay, yeah. Yes. But what's fascinating about this is that everybody that I have discovered, the world is divided into those without God who serve government and those with God who serve humanity. There's a huge distinction. It's almost like the doctors that to believe in a higher power are the ones who are being purged from government, and the ones that are, you know, just following orders, you know, what I call the health Nazis under Dr. Fascist, and I'm pretty blunt about it. They're the ones that don't have a God. They don't have a higher power. That government is their higher power. You know, they worship at the altar of Fauci, and they do what they're told without a conscience, without a soul, without thinking. That's who they are. They've lost. When you lose God, you lose your humanity. And the one thing that is common to everybody that's been on this panel is a strong belief in God and a guidance from God. And as I say, I kind of joke around that this show is powered by, you know, God and ADHD. And I'm not sure who wins at any particular moment. But that's really what gets us going here. So this is a universal. And I find it very interesting. That's the pattern I've noticed. Tiffany, go ahead. Feel free.
This is Tiffany. I just want to agree with what Greg is saying. And I think it's really important to recognize the position that you're in right now as a doctor who has changed his mind and then done something about it. I mean, we all know that the majority of doctors out there have been following this path. They've been indoctrinated into it for decades, and they've been administering shots. And I think that what COVID has done is it's given doctors a moment to stop and think when they're witnessing things happen in front of them and they're starting to feel that things aren't right. There's a difference between knowing in the back of your mind but not changing anything. And then there's the people who discover that it's not right and then take a stand. And what you're doing is exemplifying everything that we want to see from all of these doctors. Like, you're that authority now. You're that very experienced, prestigious, published doctor that recognized that they were wrong and stood up and stepped out. And what you're doing is more important than maybe even the doctors who never gave a shot in their life, because you're showing the rest of the people that it's okay to go against the grain. It's okay to stop what you're doing and shift your message and fight for it. And I think COVID has put an opportunity in front of us where we're seeing more and more people and doctors able to do that. And so the louder you scream, the more people follow and the more lives are saved in the long run.
Jim?
Well said.
Yeah.
I am solitude in your support, and you're all grace. And I am proud of the fact that I am one of the right doctors of history, the 17 of us who have never, ever recommended COVID-19 vaccine. So I did wake up, and I woke up well before 2020 when this nonsense started.
Yeah. I got a question for Tiffany, and then I want to go to Bailey, and then John has some interesting data to present, so that'll probably be a different topic as we move on. Tiffany, when did you first get an inkling that there were vaccine problems? When I say for me, it was probably early 90s. You know, with a different set of vaccines. When did you hit upon this?
Yeah, so before, I have a 7 and 9 year old daughters right now. And before I even got I had a good friend of mine whose daughter was severely injured by the DTaP vaccine. Actually, she was injured by all of the vaccine series that she was getting, but she had the worst injury after her 8 months vaccines, and she just turned 12 years old, and she's still nonverbal in a wheelchair. So she got harmed pretty terribly. And when I became pregnant, that friend of mine came to me and she just said, just research vaccines like you would anything else. Not everything is what it seems. And before you have children, a lot of times you don't even think about that. And mm-hmm. It doesn't take much investigation to learn that there isn't a ton of necessity for it, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And that over time, they just keep adding more and more shots to the list, and there's not any good reason for it. They just make it part of the standard operating procedures when you have children. And so early on, I started doing my own research, and I came to the conclusion that the risk-benefit analysis was totally in favor of not vaccinating your child. And so my journey started with helping moms just through Facebook with their own research, right? Like opening that door to saying, okay, just like I was told, not everything is what it seems. If there's something in your gut that's telling mm-hmm. you you're not sure to do this, investigate it, and I can help you do that. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time on Facebook for years helping people through their own research because it's very overwhelming. And ultimately, when I moved to the state of Florida about 6-7 years ago, I got connected with these great people here with Health Freedom Florida. And then that encouraged me to step out from behind the computer and get involved in some advocacy work. And I worked with the team at the film VAC, so Del Bigtree and Polly Tommy, and that gave me insight into what truly was happening to these families mm-hmm. and the stories and how common they were and not few and far between, like Mo had mentioned. And it really just lit a fire in my belly. And so ever since then, I felt like it's my duty to try to be a part of educating people on, you know, the truth of the power the pharmaceutical industry has over the decisions that we're trying to force parents to make, and then ultimately getting to this place where we recognize that it comes down to protecting our rights and really, you know, allowing us to have that ability to make the decisions for our own bodies and our children's bodies.
Yeah, but they've got fear and guilt on their side because you don't want to be the parent who got your kid sick because you didn't get the shot. And that weighs on every mm-hmm. parent's mind, and because you don't want to be that bad parent. You know, you want to be the best parent yeah. you can, you know, and everybody feels that, right? And so let's say my daughter got 3 shots, 2 that we authorized and 1 that they snuck in, which caused her not to get any more shots ever. You know, that was it. We were done. So she only had a couple of them. My kid's fine. He's an adult now, which is, and you know, everything's great. It's just sad for all the other folks that didn't, you know, learn or get the opportunity to learn or like I say, we all wish we could have helped more people, but use the best information you can at the time. And Mo might be interested to learn that when, especially as you're in the homeschool network, I want to talk more about that too, because as soon as the school's closed, as soon as the teachers' unions, you know, were in Argentina on the beaches and all the places they went, you know, on government money, when the school's closed, I said, great, this is wonderful. Keep them closed. Sell the buildings. Get rid of them. Abolish your school boards. Let's go full private right now. And I'm screaming this for like weeks on my show. I said, this is the window of opportunity. We can get rid of all the public schools right now. They're all closed. Didn't happen, but it could have. You know. So I was with you on that. And what do you think? Do you think we could close all the public schools, Mo? And then I'll get to Bailey.
Yeah, this is Mo. So, you know, there's definitely, I personally would say yes.
Okay.
My boys are not in the public school system, mm-hmm. Or it would need a radical overhaul because that we've, and you know what, I have to put it out there that to see more parents engage because somebody rang the bell of alarm to understand what was actually transpiring within those classrooms, mm-hmm. was huge because it awoke not only the mama bears but the papa bears, because you see dads out there at these school board meetings as well as these powerful moms. And
they're
going to start looking at things.
that's the part I want to talk about as we get to if we get into psychotropic drugs and alienated youth and toxic masculinity and a bunch of other things that I think might be interesting. But yeah, dads are there's your silent army right there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, DeSantis labeled it really well this year, you know, the year of the parents. And but I think that brought a lot of real, even people who were on the cusp of saying, I don't know if I can do homeschooling, I don't know if I can do unschooling, I think, you know, pushed a lot of parents to go, okay, I need to really assess this and look into this, because the school system is tragically overpowered by
you can't do worse
than some radicals.
Schools. I mean, there's not a parent out there that can do a worse job than the government schools. I mean, let's face it. Yeah.
And let's throw in there too that there's not only just what's happening with CRT, not just what's happening with the school boards in themselves creating this dictatorship, but there's a lot of other problems out there as well. The mold in the schools is a problem that's, you know, damaging our children. The waters that we're drinking, is really challenging as well because of the pipes that are going into the majority of these schools. There's a multitude of different things, the Coke machines that are sitting at every corner within the schools, as well as
the
radicals.
How about moving to a bell? how about living in an 1800s factory-style design building? Looks more like a prison. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list is endless. Let me get to Bailey. Yeah. Brian Artis is joining us. I want to get him to sign in. And then I'll get to John's amazing new data finds. We've been sort of talking. I talk to most of these folks during the week too. So as we, you know, it takes a week to get our show ready, and we just have so much to cover. It's amazing. Bailey, when did you first find out that there was a vaccine problem? I'm just curious how long you've been in this.
Sure. Yeah, I actually have a little bit of a different story than everybody else. I am vaccine injured myself, although I didn't realize it until I started researching it when I got pregnant. But I went to my childhood doctor that I've been to for years upon years, and I was going to go to college. And so I needed to get an additional vaccine to get into college, you know, to live in the dorms. And my doctor had told me that she lost my medical records, and so she needed to completely revaccinate me. Still at this time, it's 1980, I don't know, in the 80s sometime. And so it still wasn't a huge schedule then. Probably got 6 or 7 vaccines in one day. But because I was there and my parents weren't there, I mean, it's shocking to me that she could even do this while my mother wasn't in the room. But I got completely revaccinated. And so it wasn't until I got pregnant. And for me, it was also a God story of God just told me you need to look into it. So I did a little bit of like the preliminary research, realized that, you know, I probably shouldn't do some of the vaccines. And I can remember exactly what hill I was driving down where God spoke to me and said, where there's smoke, there's fire. He didn't tell me, you know, what that meant, but I knew immediately what he was talking to about. So I went back and started doing a deep, deep dive. And that's when we realized, A, I'm not vaccinating my child, so I have a vaccine-free son. But B, I have vaccine injury that I didn't even realize. I didn't equate. So it's not obviously a massive injury because at that point I was an adult. I was closer to an adult, and you know, I'm more developed in things as where these babies, when they get these vaccines, it's a drastic difference. But regardless, there was no informed consent. There was really no information whatsoever. And then after about, I don't know, a month or so after getting vaccinated, my doctor's office just sent me all my medical records and asked me not to come back. So, you know, I should have.
How about
my
that?
Mom and I should have been.
Gee, what a coincidence.
Yeah. And we should have been like, what is this? But unfortunately, you know, this day and age, and not that all doctors are not trustworthy, but we look at them as gods or as some sort of religion that they know best and they know right, and I don't ask questions. And so now this has taught me, I ask so many questions that I probably annoy most doctors or whoever I'm seeing, because I need to be fully informed on what I'm doing to my body or my son's body or period. I just want to know what is this and what do you know about it? Because sadly, doctors don't know much about it. And Jim, I actually appreciate that you would come out and just apologize. I think that's all that, and again, I had to wake up at a certain point as well, but that's all that those of us who are awake now want to hear is, hey, I'm sorry, and now I'm doing it different, which is what we want in everything. So I appreciate that.
I do too. Brian yeah. Artis has joined us, and we're going to get Brian to enter and sign in, and then we'll get to John's data. But you're in the right place, basically, in terms of vaccine recovery. That's one of the things we talk about. Brian's got a protocol for that, and I don't know if it's specific to individual vaccines, but I'm going to ask him. We can find out. And the other thing is, when the doctor didn't have your medical records, didn't your school have your medical records? Isn't that how you got there in the first place?
Well, I was going to college my first year, so I was getting my medical records to take them to college.
Your elementary school and your high school should have had those records,
too. These are things I didn't even know back then.
Okay,
you know,
I'm just curious.
I just trusted my doctor, right?
Yeah. not blaming, just you know, my inquisitive
mind. No, I get you.
Goes towards these places quickly. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
And of course, they never suggested it either. What a surprise. And they got to sell more vaccines. What a surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes,
they got you
exactly.
twice. Yeah.
Yep.
Brian?
Yeah.
Can you help Bailey with some vaccine recovery? Why don't you enter and sign in, please?
Hi, this is Dr. Artis. How is everybody?
We're having a great time. It's Thursday.
Doing well.
I love Thursday.
Well, I love Thursdays. I actually love every day. But I'm glad to be with you again, Greg. Great job with Action Radio. Hope everybody has a great week. So your question to me is about vaccine injuries or my awareness of vaccines.
Yeah. Well, I figure you guys, you know, I mean, just in general, and then if there's something specific to Bailey's vaccines, maybe that can help now, too, even though it's been years. You know, I don't know how long. I think at any time you can improve your health. So there might be, I mean, anything, especially on stuff that you can, you know, send me that I can post and all these folks can have as well would be a good thing, a vaccine recovery. I always want to look to the positive. We always want to look to whatever action we can take. You know, whatever the injury is, you know, how do we improve our health in any ways, nutrition, exercise, supplements, anything that is going to reduce this, reduce the spike proteins of COVID and the effects of the quote, traditional vaccines, which don't seem to be doing much of anything either. Brian?
Yeah, very true. Yeah. So a couple things I'll just say, if there's something that doesn't make sense, like she just mentioned, if there's smoke, there's probably a fire. Obviously, there's most likely a fire. So don't just dismiss any rationale behind why the smoke is present and why you see it. There's usually, we learned since we were very young, there's this concept called cause and effect. So you have these effects that are occurring in children, these effects and side effects that are occurring, but they don't ever want to actually acknowledge that there might have been a chemical cause for those caused by any medications, whether vaccines or prescription drugs or OTCs. They really just want to cast doubt on all of it. So when I became very aware, like she mentioned a second ago, that we have this view, I did too growing up, that medical doctors in their white coats knew everything and had all the answers in regarding to health, and they were always looking out for your best interests, and we're going to be honest and ethical with you and try to protect you. That's what I thought they were doing in regards to your health. I learned very early on as a very young parent that wasn't the case. When my son was 4.5 months old, I was a new parent. I was raised not in the alternative sphere. I was very traditionally medically raised. I was vaccinated as a kid, very few vaccines according to what they're doing now to children. But that's how I was raised. I never knew what chiropractic was, never even saw an acupuncturist. I didn't know anything in relationship to anything other than conventional medicine. So when my son was first born, I was a new parent at 22 years old. He's born, he gets vaccinated day one, but over the next 4.5 months, he has problems that are unrelated to vaccines, but actually related to trauma from forceps extraction. We learned this later, but I had no idea what the problem was here with my son, but it was horrific, the experience. But I'm going to give you a scenario where I learned that the medical profession, I cannot trust them all the time, especially in the relationship to drugs they prescribe or give you or your children. And I would actually relate that to the same products developed by the same companies. So pharmaceutical companies make drugs. They also make vaccines. So a doctor, pediatrician, gave my son, wrote a prescription for an antibiotic. He's 4.5 months old. While nursing, his mother gives him the antibiotic. Within 2 minutes, he goes into a grand mal seizure while nursing.
Wow.
And had never had a seizure before. I immediately ran, because I was scared to death, ran to the phone, called from the kitchen, called the actual prescribing pediatrician and wanted to know, do I take him to the emergency room? What do I do? He's freaking out. He's flailing all over the place. Eyes rolling in the back of his head. I didn't even know what kind of seizure it was at the time. I just knew he was losing all faculties and control. And the medical doctor actually said to me on the phone when I was looking for his help and guidance, he actually yelled at me through the phone, that antibiotic would have never done that. It was something you did, Mr. Artist. Did you drop your baby? This is what he said. Did you drop your baby or did you shake your baby?
Your fault. Yeah.
And I denial. Lost it. Mm-hmm. Lost it. I realized then, in that very moment, I knew what the effect I was watching was and the cause of what it was. There was only one thing different in the 4.5 months ever that would have led to something he had never had before. You give him a drug, 2 minutes later, he's going into a seizure. There is a direct correlation. He's been breastfeeding for 4.5 months. That hasn't changed. Her diet hasn't changed. That never caused a seizure. So there's only one thing that changed. We gave you a drug. At this moment, I realized the medical doctors were in fear of liability being exposed, so they would rather push it off on you and cast blame on you, which is what they do all the time, even in relationship to vaccine injuries. They'll make the parents think they're crazy or the individual who's injured crazy and has nothing to do with what they gave you most of the time. And that's when I actually realized you guys don't have all the answers I thought you did, nor are you always on our side. I really wanted his help and his trust. I had no idea where to turn. My parents aren't medical professionals. I just had this guy, and he's the one that gave the drug. And what do I do? Do I take him to the ER? It wouldn't have mattered. I wasn't trying to sue him or file a malpractice suit against him or to file a complaint against the board. But that's how they live. They live in fear of that stuff. Anyway, that's when I realized you can't always trust drugs. About 6 months later, actually after this, I never gave this kid another antibiotic or another drug after that. About 6 months later, I learned that I have a nephew who's diagnosed with autism, and he's about 20 months old. This is in 2001, by the way. I had no idea what autism was. I just heard I had a nephew who was diagnosed with autism, and I was like, what in the world is that? I hear that the same week I'm walking through a grocery store, and there's a Newsweek article at the checkout, and its title is Autism? MMR Vaccine. Now, autism was a new word to me in 2001, so I just picked up the Newsweek article, the magazine, put it on the checkout. I bought it, went home, and read the whole article. So I was like, maybe I'll learn something about autism and whatever this MMR vaccine is, which I didn't know anything about. I read this whole, like, 10-page article. At the end of the article, it says, and it is concluded, there is no conclusive side to this argument that it does MMR vaccines cause or doesn't cause autism. And I remember thinking like this, well, why'd I buy this article and why would anybody buy this? It doesn't actually answer the question at all that you have on the cover. So I actually went down to the library at my chiropractic college, and I actually signed on to PubMed.gov that I had a free annual membership to as a student. Mm-hmm. For every day, Greg, 6 hours after class, I would sit in the library and I would read every published research study I could on every single vaccine. But I started with the MMR vaccine. And as I would go through that information, I would go to the CDC's website, and I would look up – I mean, it was only 2001. The Internet's only been around like 7 years at that point, so there was very limited stuff. But everything I saw, I was like, oh, my God, they're lying about everything, including the polio vaccine. Polio vaccine didn't get rid of polio. It was introduced when the last 10% of that whole pandemic was even around.
I wanted to talk about polio.
The death rate has already declined 90%.
Yeah, sewers and chlorine and swimming pools, I think, did more – good sewers and chlorine and swimming pools did more to cure polio than any vaccine. Have I got that right? I'm going to ask John about that, too, because he's probably got the data on it. Am I right, Brian?
Amen to that. Yep. Sanitation, actually, if you want to know the real case, even if polio was eradicated by the vaccine, which is not true, but if polio was an infectious disease, which I didn't live during that period, so I don't really know. But for those who lived in that period, this was an infectious disease going around. Do you remember what they did to slow the spread of polio? Do you remember what they used to do with people who were infected with polio? I remember. I've seen all the documentaries. I've heard all the stories from all my elderly patients. I know what they did.
I'm not sure. What'd they do?
they isolated all of them and put them in these things called iron lung chambers. They'd line them up in gymnasiums, churches, put them in
ventilators.
They would just push,
the ventilators.
Push oxygen into, and they just put them in big tanks, not allow them to touch anybody or breathe on anybody. And during that period of isolation, I've had this conversation many times. I went to a United Health Department, United States Health Department, to get an exemption form for vaccines, and the head nurse looks at me for my children for school, and the head nurse looks at me and goes, I guess you didn't live in my generation. And I said, why are you saying that? And they said, I can't believe you're not vaccinating your kids. And I was like, well, I won't ever. And she goes, I guess you didn't grow up in my generation. I said, you're like 30 years older than me. Of course I didn't grow up in your generation. But why are you saying that? And she goes, because I lived through polio. And I went just like this. Do you know who you work for? She goes, yes, the United States Health Department. I said, yes, but do you know who your employer is? And she goes, yes. And I said, who is it? And she goes, the United States Health Department. I said, no, it's not. Do you know who your employer is? It's on your paycheck you get every Friday or every other Friday. And she goes, I don't know. I said, it's the CDC. Don't you see the logo on your checks when you get paid? And she goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I said, that's your employer. Have you ever been on your employer's website to look at the data about the polio virus and the vaccine? And she goes, no. And I said, I'm going to give you a link. I want you to go look at the charts on your employer's website. Next Thursday, when you come into my office for your next appointment, she happened to be a patient of mine. I said, I want you to come in there and explain to me, after looking at your employer's data, if you're still convinced the vaccines got rid of polio. 4 days later, she comes into my office and she goes, you were right. The vaccine didn't get rid of it. I said, so what did? She goes, I don't know. I said, I can tell you, because the CDC actually learned from the polio pandemic how to handle an outbreak of an infectious disease. I said, and they actually demonstrate it every year right now throughout the United States. You just don't know that's what they're doing. And she goes, like what? And I said, all right, so polio is a virus, right? It's extremely contagious. What they did during that pandemic or epidemic, they actually would isolate those individuals into isolation, social distance them, not the real term back then, but they would put them into an iron lung chamber, isolate them into churches and gyms away from everybody else in the populace. And then 90% of polio infections started to decline. And then when there's only 10% left of the die-off of the infection, the vaccines are actually introduced. And then they get the credit. I said, that's not what happened. I said, do you want to know what they learned from polio? The CDC learned that if there's an outbreak of a virus among a very small population or concentrated area, they like a school, like let's picture a public school, and you have an elementary school and there's a flu outbreak, which is another supposed viral outbreak, what do they do with the school? They shut it down and send everybody home. Mm-hmm. And they separate them all from each other because they can't spread it to each other. That's how they control the spread. That's what they did with polio. That's what they learned. It wasn't flu shots that get rid of the flu. It's actually taking people away from people with those types of contagious infections. That's what the CDC learned with polio. It wasn't ever the vaccine, but they give it credit for that, and it's ridiculous. So anyway,
see, I thought polio was a waterborne bacteria. That's how it transferred in the swimming pools. So it's not airborne at all.
Totally agree.
It's a waterborne, isn't it? A waterborne bacteria? I could be wrong.
Yeah, however it was spread, I actually agree.
That's why in swimming pools.
Chlorination of water, that it took care of all of that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but we also can't forget about the DDT that was being sprayed that was causing polio-like symptoms in people.
Absolutely.
Ooh, I don't know about that. That's new. Huh.
And that's why I say the supposed viral spread. Yeah, you can almost create any of these symptoms you see in infectious diseases with chemicals or poisons or venoms. You can do any of it. Anyway.
Yeah.
I just want you to know, I don't trust the vaccines. I would not trust the vaccines after everything I've read within about 6 weeks of studying PubMed.gov and the CDC's data on their own research on vaccines.
Yeah,
I realized very early on as a young parent that the risks using vaccines in my own children far outweighed the benefits. And I've stood very clear. I've had 4 children since then. My oldest son was vaccinated up to 1 year. He's 21 now. I have 4 other children who or 20, 18, 16, and 10, none of them have ever received a vaccine. All very healthy. None of them have been plagued with any swine flu, bird flu, COVID crap. They've been very, very healthy. So, but it hasn't been easy, right? It's amazing just how far-reaching the mindset of even family members, teachers. This is not a joke. If I can share this with you. My oldest son, because I stopped vaccinating at 1 year old, and did not receive the MMR vaccine or anything else after that. By the time he gets to kindergarten in the summer, all kids go up and meet their teacher that they're going to have in the fall. He was so excited to have his first teacher in elementary school. He goes to school on the first day. We drop him off, take him up there for his first day in kindergarten. He's a new teacher. This is a public school. About an hour later, I go off to my clinic. My wife, their mother at the time, gets a phone call from the school, and this is what the principal said. "I'm sorry, but we had to move your son from one class to another class." And she goes, "Why did you do that?" And they said, "Oh, because we moved several kids, actually, from one class just to balance out the class numbers for these two teachers." And she goes, "No, no." The mom goes, no. "Why did you choose Bryce as one of those kids?" Because he was so excited about his new teacher he met over the summer. And then the principal goes, "Well, actually, I have to be honest with you. It was just Bryce we moved." "Why? Why just Bryce?" "This is not a joke. The teacher told the principal that she had to move Bryce from her class to another class because her OBGYN told her," the teacher, "who was struggling with infertility," this is not a joke, "and was receiving in vitro fertilization treatments. The OBGYN told her, if you teach in your class an unvaccinated child, that will increase your risk of being unable to become pregnant. So you need to get the unvaccinated kid out of your class." That's what the teacher told the principal.
What?
And I went.
We got moms on the panel.
The mom calls my clinic.
Yeah.
The mom calls my clinic crying, my boy's mama, crying, because now she feels like her son's been isolated, ostracized, kicked out of class, right? Being treated
was
like
in class by himself?
Some kind of diseased kid.
Was he like all
by himself?
Or was
to another class.
Yeah. So they didn't find any other. Well, of course, my theory is, well, if everybody else is vaccinated, what's the problem? Yeah, but they don't seem to go by that.
Yeah.
You know, you got to keep going. Moms?
Tiffany,
from some moms here. Go ahead.
Is this a question for Jim? This is Tiffany. Jim, where does this mindset come from? That is so irrational. What would give an OBGYN the authority to make such a bold statement? Is the indoctrination so strong that they're building their own truths in their head? Because that is mind-blowing to me.
That's exactly what's going on, Tiffany. I mean, I don't want to throw too many stones at this obstetrician, because for all I know, it was me.
Nope.
I don't think
it was Tennessee.
Right. I don't think
it was.
Not
you, Dr. Thorpe.
But I think you nailed it, Tiffany. Because, you know, we just get so brainwashed by this nonsensical, and I call it disaster capitalism, brainwashing. Because what we're doing, what they've done is they're grooming physicians even in medical school, they're grooming physicians to become a corporatist and to support the massive profits. And we didn't know, I didn't know, 20 years ago, the journals that I was reviewing for and the journals that I was publishing in were corrupt. They're completely supported by pharmaceutical dollars and by the medical industrial complex. So it's very powerful. It's very, very powerful indoctrination.
I was just reminded of a couple of things. Go ahead, Brian.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely indoctrination. Dr. Jim Thorpe, you're absolutely right. I just want you to know, I was called. I canceled all my appointments for the rest of the morning, drove right up to the school, walked up to the front desk, and there was a guy sitting there between two other assistants. And I said, where's the principal? And he looks up at me and he goes, "You must be Dr. Artis." I said, "You better believe it. You better get into your office right now." I said, "You better go into your office right now with me." We go in there, and I said, "Why did you move my son from one class to another?" Because remember, they only talked to their mother. And then he tells me the story. And I looked at him and I went like this. "Did the OBGYN write a letter that he signed, gave to the teacher to give to you? That he said this? He or she said this?" And he goes, "No." And I said, "So you approved the moving of my student based on something she said?" simply, yes. And I went like this. Good, now you're going to go back to the teacher. You're going to demand that OBGYN put it in writing. And then I want you to know something. He'll never write it because I'm going to sue him because he knows he's making a false claim. I said, so I want you that in writing. There's no way you're moving my kid without that in writing. So go put him back in that class right now or I'm going to sue you and this whole school district for slander, discrimination against my son. And I said, now I want you to know why I'm behaving this way. Because I've got three other children at this point right behind them. And do you think for a second I'm going to let teachers in the teacher's lounge talk about my artist children as if they're some plagued children and that if the next artist kid comes into the school, you have the right to just make up something and kick him out to another class like there's something like he's got leprosy or something. I said, you are not going to actually be bad-mouthing or discriminating against my children because we're not vaccinating them. So put him back in the class until you get something in writing from a medical doctor. And he goes, okay. And I said, and by the time I get back to my clinic, I better find out that kid's in that class until you get that letter or I'm suing you and this whole school district. I promise you it's coming. You're messing with the wrong dad. By the time I got back to the clinic, I didn't even leave the parking lot yet. He called and he goes, your son's back in the class. I said, good. I just want everybody listening here to know, 2 months later, bereft of this teacher, she was pregnant with twins. How about that? So I went back up to the school to congratulate her, and I said, this is what happens when you actually teach a unvaccinated, healthier kid. That's what happens when you have more than the one you asked.
You need to put a little advocacy manual together for parents, you know, for schools, because one of the biggest problems is parents don't have the ammunition to fight with. And so that maybe Tiffany would work on that as a little booklet or a little internet guide or something like that for parents, you know, how to advocate in the face of medical absurdity might be interesting. Anybody else on the panel want to do this? Then I want to we'll sort of move on to John here for some of his interesting things.
This is Mo. Just
Mo,
wanted to throw
it
out there that, yes, yeah. So under Health Freedom Florida, all three of us have focused on, you know, educating parents about their options when they do go to school. So in public school, there's a lot of different counties that push no shots, no school, no shots, no school. Well, that's just simply not true. We know here in the state of Florida, parents have the right underneath our legislative statutes that they can either get a religious exemption or a medical exemption. We know that medical exemptions are under extreme scrutiny. So we've done videos to show people, you know, the steps that they need to take to get religious exemptions as well as medical exemptions. And we also share some of the hurdles that they may experience when they go into the health department to get those religious exemptions. And we clearly define what they are required to provide and what they're not required to provide so that they go in there and they're empowered to be able to advocate for their children to ensure that they walk out of there with the religious exemption without any of the additional documentation that the health department is trying to get these parents to sign. So we've got some videos out that we've done through the last couple of years about that. What was fantastic, I'm going to throw out there that in special session, in addition to the parental rights bill that was signed in April of 2021, November special session actually added some additional statute language that requires the school counties, so the county schools, I want to say the like Hillsborough County, for example, or Sarasota County school systems, they are required in accordance with the parental rights legislation that they create a procedure to educate parents on their ability to receive a religious or a medical exemption. So we have taken it upon ourselves to reach out to several of the counties since this bill went into effect last year to ask them, please confirm and send to us what is the procedure that you're doing to provide parents with informed consent regarding religious and medical exemptions. They've been a little challenged to provide us that documentation, but trying to get out there to get that messaging. It's not no shots, no school. It's no shots, no exemptions, no school. So you have a venue outside of getting those vaccinations. You're just not being fully informed about your options.
See, I would put into the law that, you know, the videos, the parental rights, you know, that be required before the kids go to school, that you see a video on your rights. You know, I would include that in the law. That might be something, an additional amendment at some point. Yeah. I've got a couple of things that I wrote, too, that if we get a chance to get to. One of them is on a parental bill of rights. I went through the current law, Parental Bill of Rights, and it took all the places where it said subject to the legislature as provided by law, you know, unless there are reasonable restrictions, a compelling state interest, all this BS language that the legislature put in to make the rights basically privileges, you know, to be awarded by the state of Florida. And so I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that. Be curious if you can compare that to the current law and see if there's anything in my bill that might help out and your bill. And I want to kind of our bills together. So this is going to be I want to have you all back, you know, at some point in the near future so we can kind of compare these things. Anybody else have a comment on this? And then I want to get to John, who hasn't had a chance to release his data flow for this week yet. Anyone else? Going once, going twice? John Cullen. What have you been up to this week? What have you discovered?
Maybe I can do a little segue.
Feel free.
From the topic. Yeah, so I have three daughters, and they're 32, 27, and 7. And I like Dr. Jim Thorpe. I was not an anti-vaxxer at all. I took my kids to Africa, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. I got shots. They got shots. I've never been an anti-vaxxer. I kind of fell for the Milgram experiment phenomenon, which is, I think, what Dr. Artis was referring to, which is, and I think Tiffany and Bailey and Mo also kind of suggested this, which is that we all just kind of blindly trust our physicians. And that's what the Milgram experiment showed, is that people in white coats get blind trust.
You should say what it is really, really briefly, because we always have new people listening. Especially in Canada, Australia, and England, our audience is growing nicely. So we're getting beyond the United States. And so, yeah, just quickly detail that, please. And then
the Milgram experiment, I think they did, I forget if it was at Princeton or Yale. Dr. Thorpe, you'll remember this. But they did an experiment where they brought in people to be tested. And when they get the answer wrong, they would receive an electric shock. And the person asking the questions delivers the electric shock when they get the answer wrong to the question. And the electric shocks would get progressively stronger and stronger and stronger. And they brought in all these volunteers, both people to ask questions and people to answer the questions. And as these people kept getting the answers wrong, and they were applying more and more electricity, the person on the other end would start to scream and holler. And the person in the white coat was the person administering this test. And the people would look at them and say, well, the guy's screaming. And they're like, no, that's part of the experiment. Please continue. And so because there's an authority figure with a white lab coat, they continue. And they're administering basic, you know, electric shock torture. And so you can read all about it. It's called the Milgram experiment. And again, I forget if it was at Yale or Princeton. It was one of the two. And it's a fascinating look into human psychology and the blind faith.
Was
that, Jim?
It was at Yale.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a serious study, fascinating conclusions, draw your own. You can read all about it. But it's this blind faith. And so I so greatly appreciate what Jim said earlier and what you said, Greg, as well. Jim put forward this mea culpa and said, look, I was not an anti-vaccine guy. And I saw all this new evidence and I changed my perspective. I'm paraphrasing what I heard from Jim. And that is so rare in the field of medicine, to see that level of humility, to have a physician come forward and say, you know what, I was wrong on this. And now that I've seen this new evidence and new data, I have to reconsider my position. So, so rare, and I respect it so much. And what you said, Greg, which is you got fooled. You got fooled by system and an establishment that, quite frankly, was set up to fool you for all intents and purposes.
Yep.
Right? They've got different motivations. And so you can't feel guilty about being fooled. Well, that's kind of what I've been specializing in for the last 2.5 years, is how have you guys been getting fooled? And it's so rare to have physicians come forward and admit they got fooled again one more time with this pandemic. Because what you've seen and what you've been told is not necessarily what happened. Right? So we were told this was the China virus that came from Wuhan. Right?
And that's now, like the gong out of sarcasm.
Still feel like, oh, yeah, for sure. This came from Wuhan. This came from China. And that's not what the data illustrates. Yeah. So that's what I've been specializing in. And as far as, you know, the vaccine stuff, my 7-year-old had the MMR vaccine. I think at 2 years old, and she, you know, a 2-year-old little girl, and now she has speech apraxia.
Ooh. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but I'm just sorry it happened.
Yeah. That's your full-blown autism. So
oh, wow.
She doesn't speak yet. Yeah, she doesn't speak.
I'm sorry. I just, you know, I hear these horror stories, and I feel like, Jim, that, you know, we're too late. We could have done this. And those of us here, you know, in the forefront, I you know, speaking of legislation, I wrote a bill, not to blow my own horn here or anything like that, but just these things came to me earlier than most people. I had a bill on February 27th to Congress, and no one took any notice of it. You know, even my own Congressman Matt Gaetz, you know, who was pretty good on most issues, I said that only half the money for Congress can be allocated towards vaccines. The other half has to go to early treatments and cures because we already know what they are. And this was in February of 2020. And I was like this lone voice out there. And now I'm starting to meet these other lone voices. And I hear that Jim was doing what he was doing. And John, you were doing what you were doing. And Tiffany and all these folks. And Brian, you're all doing what you were doing. Not to leave anybody out. I've got a new caller. I'll get you in a little bit. But all of us, you know, and now we're all together, you know, from different areas. And it's fascinating. But we're still being suppressed. You know, and I have a bill to cure that too. But it's just fascinating that you know, the people who try to control everybody have broken us into the conformists and the rebels. And the rebels are all friends now. And so things are going to get very interesting, I think, as we go forward. And well, you know, Jim's not alone. And John, you're not alone. And Tiffany and Bailey and Moe, you're not alone. And Brian, you're not alone. You know, and there's a lot of people that feel the same way, but we have to just be louder to bring the other folks that only have limited ability to get out beyond their, quote, comfort zone and be in a place where you know, it's very hard to be the only voice. You know, the 2+2=5 class. There was another experiment. John, you remember that one? Where they put one person in a class and, you know, what's 2+2? And, well, 4, right? And they're going, no, it's not. It's 5. And everybody was being experimented on except the 8-year-old in the room, you know, with all the other 8-year-olds, you know.
That was part of the Milgram experiment. That was part of the Milgram experiment was they were forced to give the person electric shocks when they got the answer right.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
And the person in the white coat told them, no, that's the wrong answer. So, you know, 3+1=, and they would say 4, and they said, no, that's wrong. The answer's 5. Give them the shock. Mm-hmm. And they would do it because of the white coat phenomenon. So I'm just very grateful for Jim's humility and for what you said, Greg, earlier, because this idea that, you know, we can look at people, we can look at events, or we can look at concepts. And it was Eleanor Roosevelt who said, stupid people talk about other people. Intermediately intelligent people talk about events, and intelligent people talk about concepts and ideas. That was Eleanor Roosevelt. And again, I'm paraphrasing. This idea of this pandemic and how this pandemic was used in so many different ways to accomplish so many different objectives is what I'm trying to call attention to with the data. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember if I shared this with you guys before. I used to be, when I was a child, 10 years old, I was a performing professional magician. Okay.
Didn't know that.
I was a little kid who got paid and had the outfit with the cape and all that stuff. And I went to, like, magic camp. Like, this was serious. Like, I was a hardcore little magician kid, right?
Now you play with data.
And as an
I just find that
well,
out. Like, don't ask. Tell us be why. I just find
but
that
as an
hard.
Adult, it's but it's still a hobby. It's still a hobby as an adult. It's a fun thing to do for kids and things like that. So when I look at these, this narrative, often I look at it from a magician's point of view, because a lot of it has to do with distraction. A lot of it has to do with look over
that
here.
That is fascinating.
Because
that's absolutely
what
fascinating.
What we're doing is over there. All right. Yeah. So what I tend to do with my research is point people at the modus operandi, meaning how was this done, or point people to things that you're not supposed to look at. They don't want you to look at these things. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, they wanted you looking at Italy and France and all these, you know, hand-picked countries. And that's why I was looking at Vietnam and Cambodia and Mongolia and Thailand, right? So I was looking where they didn't want us to look. So today, as we, I'm gonna kind of give the ladies who are on the show today a little bit of goosebumps right now. So this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm going to warn you in advance. Okay? Mo, Bailey, and Tiffany, I believe the three of you are in Florida, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to give you some information that you may not have had that's so incredibly pivotal to everything we've been talking about that you're going to wonder, well, wait a second, how did we not even know this? How did that happen? And this gets into that mass hypnosis, group hypnosis. I don't know. Everybody's got a different term for it. I call it group hypnosis. This other guy calls it mass hysteria,
mass psychosis. Yeah.
It's group hypnosis. Yeah. So the net of it is I'm looking at the data from Florida right now from the CDC. So first of all, the CDC locked down all of their death data for a month in June. So the month of June, all of the mortality data was getting scrubbed. They just a week ago, less than a week ago, released the new data. So the latest data from Florida shows 70,896 deaths with COVID in Florida. 70,000. 896. That's a lot of people that died with COVID.
But we know the truth,
is it
right?
Wait for it, folks. We know what's coming.
Well,
no, go ahead. You can comment.
So,
we're going to ask the primary
let me. We all know where this is going.
Well,
go
right. All right. So let's start with that. So one of the things that Dr. Birx said very early on in this was, we take a very liberal approach to mortality. And if somebody comes into the hospital with renal failure and they test positive for COVID, we're going to count that as a COVID death if they pass away. And she was clear about that. So this is what I mean. I point people to, what did they say? What exactly, what did she just tell us? We take a very liberal approach to mortality. Well, today, they're telling us that America has a million people that have died from COVID. But when you go to the comorbidity page on the CDC, it tells you that 5% of these people died with just COVID-19 on the death certificate. 5%. That's a little over 50,000 people right now. Died with just COVID on the death certificate. Everybody else, the remaining 950,000 people had on average 4 comorbidities on their death certificate. And the number one comorbidity was influenza, which supposedly disappeared. So that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But let's come back to Florida. Florida has 70,896 people that have died supposedly. But Nigeria has 200 million people, and there aren't 5,000 dead.
And that's with COVID, too, as opposed to from?
That's, well, so maybe they count more accurately and don't take quite as liberal approach as we do. But this should just kind of stop the presses. Florida has 70,896 people dead. And then we look at, you know, what is the population of Florida at you know, as of today? Population of Florida. I'll tell you in a second. Because I know that Nigeria is over 200 million people. So Florida's 22 million. So Nigeria has 10 times the population. Florida has 22 million people. Australia, when we look at Australia has about 25 million people. So Florida and Australia conceivably should have about the same number of people dead. But Australia has 10,000 and Florida has 70,000. Okay, so this is sort of a red flag that something is amiss, something's wrong. When Florida has more than 10 times the deaths of Nigeria, so maybe Nigeria is an anomaly. We go to Ethiopia. Florida has 10 times the deaths of Ethiopia, and Ethiopia has over 100 million people. So these are the places they don't want you to look. Don't look at Taiwan. Taiwan has more people than Florida. Right? So when we start making comparisons like that, and we compare Taiwan to Florida, right? They have almost the same population. The population of Taiwan. Let me pull this up here for you real quick.
Yeah. And then I want to get Taiwan's to some more of the Florida stuff and how this applies to legislation. I want to get to the kids too, because that's
okay.
The latest.
Well, this is
going to
knock you out.
Yeah.
The kids are going to knock you out. But okay. you have to be able to compare like with like. Mm-hmm. So Taiwan has about the same population as Florida. And 7,300 people dead. Florida has 70,000 people dead. Taiwan has a tenth the number. All right, so now we get to vaccinations. And they want to inoculate children between 6 months and 5 years old in order to prevent what? What are we trying to prevent by inoculating the children? So that's question number one. So Mo, Bailey, and Tiffany, the first question to whoever we're talking to is, if we inoculate the children that are under five, what is it that we're hoping to accomplish? Because we know the inoculation doesn't prevent the disease. Xavier Becerra has had it twice. Justin Trudeau has had it twice. The Vice President, Kamala Harris, has had it. Jim Psaki's had it. So people who've been inoculated, the Queen of England, they've been inoculated, but they still contracted the disease. It doesn't prevent the disease. That's obvious. So are you trying to prevent children from dying? Is that the thinking? So here's the mic drop moment that's going to give the three of you goosebumps. Of the 70,896 reported deaths in Florida, 70,896. How many were children under five?
12.
Are you guessing or you have data?
I think that it's close to 12, or is it 15?
The CDC's data. That's okay. So I'm looking at the CDC's data right now on the report live. So I'm not guessing, right? I'm calculating. I'm looking at the report as we speak. There are 25 children under five that have died with COVID in Florida.
With
COVID. So that means of the 25, 20 of them may have had cystic fibrosis is the point.
Yep.
All right. So 25 children under five out of 70,896 deaths. In 2.5 years. So the question to the people who want to inoculate the children is, what is it that you're hoping to achieve?
Marketing.
Well,
now, one of you, I just want to jump in for a second here because one of the folks actually met or talked
well,
to.
I want to ask, what does Mo? What did Mo Bailey and Tiffany think of this number?
Okay.
What does this mean to you? 25 children in 2.5 years. That's 10 kids per year have died with COVID out of 70,896 people. Is that meaningful? And why hasn't that number been brought up?
Panel?
So this is Mo.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
I just want to say,
thank
you for that info. This is Tiffany. I just wanted to say that, we've been digging into all this data for a long, long time. And it's been a year and a half since we've been noticed the data and the numbers on the CDC and how it's not COVID deaths, it's PIC deaths, pneumonia, influenza, COVID. And we've noticed from day one that they started to, that it was, I think early on, it was 3% of deaths were only COVID. Now I guess 5%. And so we have all been watching this very closely. You know, it's these things are not necessarily surprising to us. That's just what I wanted to
say. But I don't see it published, and I don't hear anybody saying it. So that to me is the mystery. So you may have been aware of it, but why don't I see Dr. Peter McCullough? Why don't I see Dr. Pierre Curry? Why don't I see any of the guys who are on television saying, well, let me give you an example. In Florida, there's only 25 kids under 5 that have died. So inoculating millions of children in order to, well, we know it doesn't prevent the disease. We know that now. So what is it you're trying to achieve? You're trying to prevent deaths. Well, if only 25 kids are dying from COVID, more kids are drowning. So why is no one citing the data? I can tell you Texas. I can tell you California. I can tell you New Jersey. I can tell, you know, pick a state. I'll tell you what the numbers are, right? In New Jersey, all the children from birth to 17, there's only 18 kids that died in 2.5 years. So what is it that you're hoping to accomplish by inoculating them? You've got 32,373 deaths in New Jersey. 18 of them are children between birth and 17. To me, this stops the whole charade. That's the mic drop. You've got 18 kids dead in New Jersey. How is that a pediatric medical emergency warranting an EUA? Forget vaccine injuries. What is the need for the vaccine in the first place?
Yeah, I want to go to Tiffany and Mo and Bailey on this because I think one of you talked to Dr. Lapidot, our either Surgeon General or Public Health, whatever his title is. You guys are working with the folks in Florida. I don't know if you're working directly with the CDC yet or not, but given this information and the data that you've gotten, what's going on in Florida, and can we help the other states? Thanks, John. I appreciate the information.
So this is Mo. I just wanted to jump in with a comment. I think collectively we all know what they're trying to achieve, right? It's usually one of three things. It's money, power, and control. It will come down to that. There's corruption and collusion that exists within the CDC, the NIH, and all of these government institutions. What I would tell you, though, is that Florida is certainly doing something right. And I think one of the greatest things that Governor DeSantis did in the last 6 months was bringing on, to your point, the new Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Latipoe. Latipoe. He has been very vocal about their position that they do not believe that the children, should be required to get these shots. And, while maybe not directly giving out those data points that were just shared, which, you know, we definitely want to cascade that out and get that out to the masses, but they've utilized it in generalized terms to say, I think DeSantis has done a number of press conferences with the statement of kids are just not susceptible. And then he's also circled back to very good talking points, and this is from Dr. Latipoe, which is it doesn't prevent infection. Now,
correct.
I like to use the word infection versus disease because they're two different things, and I learned that with HIV. It doesn't prevent infection, which, by the way, was the definition of the purpose of a vaccine for hundreds of years.
The reason I use the term is that's the terminology that's mm-hmm. used in 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB Section 3. What it says is the product may be effective in preventing such disease. So because they use that wording, I use that wording. Because I'm trying to get the EUA, I want to get the EUA terminated. And the rationale for it is there is no pediatric medical emergency. There is no obstetric medical emergency. So authorizing inoculations that do not prevent such disease, that's their wording. They don't.
Yeah.
We know they don't. Secretary Becerra had it twice now, despite being inoculated. So that's it. That's the kind of the end of the story. But to the point of DeSantis and Lodapo doing a great job, I agree. Why does DeSantis not put a point on it and say, let me give you an example. In Florida, of all the people that have died, we've had this many children die under 5 years old. Why does he not tell people the number is 25? Why do we not cite the data? Why are we afraid to use the numbers? Now, Eric Adams in New York City, they're saying he's getting ready to mandate vaccines for school-age children. How many died in New York City? Isn't that relevant? Forgive me if I'm confused. I'm like flabbergasted. Nobody seems to want to talk about the actual number of kids that died.
We probably have the same questions that you do. And, I know that as part of Health Freedom Florida, we've been putting those numbers out clearly every opportunity that we get. But why the thought leaders? And
You've been posting that? You guys have been posting how many kids under 5 years old have died and how many school-age kids have died?
Well, we've been, like I said from the beginning, we took a look at the percentage, not necessarily on the school kids side of things, I don't think, but we've been looking at the percentage of people who died with COVID versus people who died of COVID since the beginning.
So that's been 4% and 5%. I've been reporting on that, right? So since I probably was one of the key guys that broke that on YouTube, but I'm not talking about the comorbidities. I'm talking about just the number of kids the CDC has said has died in each state. Right. And I know I sound like a broken record, but you've got New York City. Eric Adams wants to mandate vaccines for all the kids in the school. Well, how many kids died, Eric? Don't you have to provide that number first to tell me there's some sort of medical emergency?
We're going to have to provide it for him.
The group hypnosis. To me, this
is
the group
hypnosis. Yeah, I know, but
nobody seems to want to talk about the
number. The group that you're talking to knows a lot of this information, so I'm not – I mean, I really appreciate having it. It's a lot of details. I don't want to get people lost in the absolute numbers just for a bit, so I'm only going to jump in for the sake of getting more of an activist position because these folks know about that. Our panel here is really up on a lot of it. Not every number that you have, but I just want to say that and I want to get more into the active part. In other words, you've got the numbers, but how do we get those out there? Do we do a press conference after the press conference?
I don't think you can argue the point. I don't think you can argue the point
without
the data. Yeah, but
I
know you're not. You're not.
But where's the One American News reporter? Where's the Newsmax reporter? Where's the person who's going to give the same information? I'm sorry, go ahead. Who's going ahead?
This is a valid. It's a valid question. It absolutely is valuable and should be brought to front center stage. And we're not Lodipo. We're not DeSantis. So we don't know why they've chosen to leave those numbers out. We're just doing what we can to make sure that it's being communicated to them, and the best way that we can try to get them that information so that they can decide behind closed doors how they want to make their arguments. Your guess is as good as ours as to why they haven't shed the light on something so startling.
I'm guessing they don't know.
Hmm.
I'm guessing they haven't seen it the way I present it. the way I present the data, it's so ridiculously clear. It's so absurdly obvious the way I present it. Like in New York City, this Eric Adams, the mayor there, the number of kids from birth to 17 years old is 34. 34 yeah. kids in the whole city in 2.5 years. And he wants to inoculate all the school kids. So that's where there are. So they say you need to speak truth to power. My truths suck the air out of the room. Nobody knows how to respond to 34 people have died in New York City, children. The 34 kids have died out of 35,000 people. 34 were kids. That's less than 0.1%.
You know, there's a problem here. First of all, I missed a caller. I was trying to get to somebody that dropped, unfortunately. So if you want to call back, feel free. I'll get you. Oh, there they are back again. But the thing is, I want to get more into the active role. In other words, we know what the numbers are. We've stated them. But what I want to do is do we need a sympathetic reporter? Do we need someone at Florida Daily News or any of these places to be able to broadcast this stuff all the time? There's a gap. There's those of us who are activists and, you know, getting the information out there. There's people in politics, but there isn't. We're missing the journalism gap. We're missing the ability of people to report on the numbers that we're saying, and then directly asking the governor, "How come you didn't say that only 25 kids died, you know, and only 5% of those actually died, you know, from COVID?" So we're talking about one, you know, or two, you know. And said, "Why aren't they saying that?" So that's what we really need. That's what I want to focus on. We've got an hour and 25 minutes left, and I want to, and like I say, I want to use the time of Bailey and Tiffany and Mo to be able to get into something much more active. And so that's where I want to move with this. We've got the data. I want to bring on a new caller who called back, fortunately, a local person here. So why don't you, first name, unless you're a public figure, I want to give your last name, and where you're calling from, and what's your, what would you like to add today? New caller, you called back. Go for it. Going once, going twice. Okay, that happens sometimes. People call it to listen when you should listen it on our website, which is the way to do it. All right. Let me ask our folks here, Tiffany and Mo and Bailey, how do we make that connection between the information that we have, that John has, that you're putting out, and get it directly to the people that need to know it? You know, where how do we sort of bridge this journalism gap? I think that's what I want to focus on.
This is Bailey.
Yeah,
we're happy to have him send us the information, and we know a few, a very small amount, but a few citizen journalists that we could get it out to.
Okay.
We're happy to try to provide that information any way we can. Absolutely. We'll take any data any way we can to try to get it out there.
Okay. Anyone else on that? Okay. Let me take a little break for a few minutes. And what I want to do when we come back, I want to know the specific bills that you folks are working on, Bailey, Tiffany, and Mo. And I want to present the bills that I'm specifically working on, the three of them, vaccine product liability, the ending of big tech censorship, and the bill I wrote with Dr. Zelenko. Oh, I am so sorry he's gone. I really am. But we wrote a bill back in August of 2020 that would reform the emergency use authorization process. But I want to find out the bills that you guys have too. So everybody mute yourselves, take a few minutes, and then we'll come back for the rest. And I'll just play a couple things. Well, let me see if I can find my shortest Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. And we'll get, about 5-6 minutes. So everybody just kind of take a quick break, and then we'll come back with everything else we do. Yeah, let's play this one here. Here we go. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction. so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Okay, enough about me playing me. Let's get back to the panel here. So I'll bring back John Cullen, bring back Bailey Kirkendall, Jim Thorpe, Tiffany Parato, Mo Van Hook, and Brian Artis. You're all back on the air. You're all live. So I muted you just in case you made noise. So I hope you all have your next cup of coffee, took a break, and let's go to some legislation. Yeah. Oh, who wants to speak? Who's got a comment? Okay. You're talking to your family? This is live radio. Okay, back live now. Anybody wants to mute themselves, feel free. I'm sorry. All right. I think, Tiffany, why don't you, let's talk about what you guys are doing in terms of legislation. And then I'm going to get, now we're in my ballpark, finally. You know, so I've been operating in the doctor ballpark for a while here. But Jim and Brian, I definitely want, and John, I want your opinion on the actual legislation we have from the data that you've got, you know, you've accumulated so far. Tiffany?
Put everything on.
And then we'll go to our panel.
Hey, Greg. So I actually am especially interested in hearing about your process for your bill writing on your end. And I can actually talk about some of the bills that we've written here for the state of Florida, because I'm curious as to the different angles that you're taking and how they might compare to some of the stuff that we put together. Because I think what we've recognized is that we need to be somewhat strategic, and we've done that with approaching health freedom legislation in a little bit of a different angle than what we've been seeing in other states. And so I am curious as to your process for getting these things written and then, you know, pushed
through
as
exactly
well.
I'll tell you exactly how it works, and then I'll get to Mo, and we can talk your bills, and we'll talk my bills. Great question. Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. So I created Action Radio to combine a citizen legislature with a radio show. The point of the radio show is so we can investigate, we can talk about it, I can bring on all you wonderful people onto the show. But the problem with talk radio is it doesn't do anything with it. I mean, they're there for ratings and advertising, and that's pretty much where it ends. That's not, I mean, yeah, I need that stuff, but the purpose here is to create the most freedom for the most people in ways that have never been thought of. So the idea is that anybody can write a bill with us, and hopefully it'll end up on the real president's desk, not the current moron who's sitting there now illegally. But it's very simple. The show is at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. This is where we talk about stuff. The website where the legislation takes place is www.writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. And this is what makes us unique in the world of broadcasting, is the fact that we have a citizen legislature. Now, it's a self-explanatory website. Unfortunately, our brilliant and wonderful webmaster, Eric Colley, passed away about 4 months ago, very suddenly, very unexpectedly, and the site's not completely finished, so I need to fix it. But what he created was amazing. Very, like I said, it's a self-guided website. So what you want to do is you've got the homepage, you can read about all the stuff of how it works. We have models, we have like a little template for writing a bill. But the real action takes place under the legislation part. So if you look at the menu bar, it'll say home, and that's the homepage, and that's kind of cool. The next page is where the action is. Okay, and the next page, the next section, legislation. So you click on legislation, and what you'll see below that is propose a new law. And so the idea is that anybody can propose any decent law or idea that they have. And if it looks good, I'm going to put it on the site. And as I've done with a woman named Amber, who has a great bill, we're going to talk about forcing the government to comply with the Constitution, novel concept. Hopefully I'll hear back from her today. We'll get her on the show Friday to talk about her bill. So anybody can come on the show, and we can work on the bill. It's like, this is like our committee. And so you folks would come on, we'd talk about the bill, you know, we'd have amendments, we'd have things like that, people would post comments, and then I would amend the bill. So it's like a committee process. From all, you know, propose a new law, it's very simple. It's your name, it's your email, which I keep secret, but that's how I can get in touch with people. You have like some dumb question that you have to answer, and then you have to select citizen bill ideas, and then you write your bill. Oh, a title, and then bill. And we like the title to actually match the bill, unlike the Affordable Care Act, you know, Build Back Better and whatever else they're calling that stupid stuff in D.C. So you write your title and you write your bill, and we keep them to single subjects, and we keep it to something, you know, regular language. You know, we don't want lawyers. We don't want people with a bunch of legalese to confuse people. My bills are generally 1 to 2 pages at the most if you printed them out. Very simple, very straightforward, one simple thing. And the format is very simple also. You start off with an introduction or a rationale. Why do you want your bill? Okay, why is this going to help us? How is this going to increase our freedom? And it has to be for everybody. If people write special interest legislation, it does not make it onto our site. Okay, if it restricts freedom, it does not make it onto our site. If it's for you specifically, ain't going to happen. But as long as it's for the equal protection of all citizens, yeah. Now I'm looking. Even if I disagree with it, I'll probably post it. All right. So the first place it goes is our workshop. Oh, did you have a question? I heard a breath. Question so far? Should I keep going? I'll keep going. I'm on a roll now. So the next part. So once someone proposes a law and I accept it and I read them all, and then it goes on to citizen bill ideas, and that's our workshop. That's where we take public comments. That's where the bills are posted, and that's where we work on them until they're done. And when they're done and when they're ready for submission to the legislatures, and the media and everybody else, they go to all proposed laws. So these are the ones we're actually proposing. And so these are the good ones. The most important one right now, it's not related to this group, but it's the most important politically, is our bill that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. It's a constitutional amendment. Very straightforward, very simple, but earth-shattering in impact. The other bills you'll find there very quickly at the top are the two bills I wrote for Florida, one on parental rights, the other on making the Constitution and individual rights paramount in Florida public health laws. And then you have a couple of the other ones, vaccine product liability restoration, which includes dumping the EUA, as I just discovered again today. And the other one is Section 230 censorship. It very simply makes their liability conditional so that we can sue their asses off if they touch anything anybody posts, their account, or any arrangement of search engines. And the last one is the bill I did with Dr. Zelenko, which reforms the FDA and the emergency use authorization procedure. Now, here's how it works. It's really simple. Everything about this, I've tried to make this as simple as possible for everybody. Everybody can read the bills. They're understandable by anybody. And if you want to advocate our bills, you simply copy the link and send it. Send it to media. Send it to talk shows. Send it to your legislator. Send it to a bunch of legislators. Send it to groups like you folks have. And, you know, in fact, you can take the bills and send them to all the groups that you know. And the beauty of these bills is they're self-correcting, because every time I make an amendment, when you click on the link to that bill again, you know, then you get the latest version. So whatever we do to a bill, it's automatically the latest version everywhere it's been sent, even though these bills are sometimes 2, 3, and 4 years old. So it's this incredible system. There's no paper. We don't print a bill, never, you know, because it's all done electronically. But anybody anywhere in the country can share a bill link to anybody that they want. We basically turn the whole country into citizen legislators, and they can take part as much or as little as they want. They can share our show. They can share a bill. They can write a bill. I will teach them how to write a bill. I teach people, you know, on a fairly regular basis how to do this. You know, and people are amazed at what they can do. And I'm amazed at the genius of just regular folks saying, I've got an idea. Okay, great. Let's run with it. That's how it works. Wow.
Really,
something
really great.
I think this is, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Bailey. Bailey, I think this is great. This is what we need individuals to be doing. It's part of our civic duty. This is we the governed. So I think this is great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, the mission of the show, our mission statement is we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. That's the philosophy. That's what we operate under. Ooh.
This is Mo, by the way. That's absolutely such an impactful statement. To be cascaded to everyone everywhere so they understand the power that we hold and the power that we give away, as well as what we can take back, right? And I think inertia is, you know, a huge – I think for decades, right, we've had inertia in the sense of there's these assumptions that are made that there isn't a lot going on, right, legislatively that is going to impact the everyday Joe. But now we're seeing, right, within the last 2 years, massive impact relating to what legislation has been put in place, as well as what governing entities such as these health authorities have come into place. So, I just think that's a brilliant statement, mission statement, and and I will be sharing that everywhere.
Oh, we're gonna be talking. Yeah, it's on an email I have, so I think Tiffany has it. It goes to the bottom of every email. That's it, you know, and expand it to include juries, because I do a lot. We have jury reform, we have jury mandatory Miranda style jury instructions. We have bills in all kinds of different areas. So for my new folks, this is whole world that I'd love to introduce you to, and I want to know what you do. So I got a couple of bills here, but I want to hear what Mo's up to, because apparently you're the, you know, the citizen legislator. Are you writing bills yourself? Are you working with other people? What are you doing, and what you've been doing with the Florida state government?
Sure. Great questions. This is Mo, and yes, we have put together some proposed bill language, is what we call it, draft language that legislators can take, give to their drafting services here in the state of Florida, have them work through where in legislation within the current statutes that this language would be embedded, and then to pursue that through the six committees between the two houses, Senate and the U.S. House, I'm sorry, the State House, to get that enacted into law. And just to give you a little bit of background, we do primarily focus within, literally parental rights, religious freedom, health freedom, right, to make those choices. So all of our bills, or rather the language of the bills that we use, is relating to those types of things. Back in, over the last 10 years, we, up until 2019, we've been very successful here being on the defensive side. So we would look at bills that would come in, and we did this in partnership with the organizations that we talked to you about. National Vaccine Information Center is a phenomenal website to go visit to talk about what's happening within the bills across the country. They do analysis on all of these bills within the states. They've been very busy the last 2 years, but they're wonderful in helping us create this language. Stand for Health Freedom as well has been a huge asset to us in this process as well. So for 10 years prior to 2019, we were out there really being on the defensive side, pushing back any legislative language that was concerning for us. And we look at it kind of three different tiers. Does the bill help us? Does the bill hurt us? Or does it have no impact on us whatsoever? So we would do a bill analysis on all of these bills that were coming through the legislative within our legislative, time frame. So we know that they work, I think, 3-4 months out of the year, and then they alternate every other year as to whether they do it in the fall or they do it in the winter perspective. So next one is January of 2023, when our legislators here in the state get back together. What we found that happened in 2019, however, was a very damaging bill that was coming down and it was very moving swiftly through all of the committees. And it was a vaccine tracking registry here in the state of Florida. A lot of people don't know that that bill did pass, even though we fought it. We got in all our cars. We drove down to Tallahassee. We beat on legislative doors. But shockingly enough, every single legislator, both on the House and the Senate, with the exception of two legislators, opposed the bill. It almost unanimously passed into law. And that was a vaccine tracking registry. It went into effect in January 2021, very coincidentally, right in the middle of the pandemic.
How about that? Well, they had to do something. Yeah. You know how it goes. It's like gun control. They had to do something. Have you checked their contributions for Pfizer contributions to their campaigns?
Right. Absolutely. There's those ties. Well, I think I've got a little funny story on one of the bills that we actually put forth not too long ago, SB 364, and the legislator that put it through. But I'll get to that in a minute. But the vaccine tracking registry was really, really alarming for us. It actually was. Everyone's in it. If your doctor in the state of Florida participates in what's called Florida Shots, which is the vaccine tracking registry program, and underneath the health department, your data is automatically being uploaded into the tracking registry. Now, they do claim that there is an opt-out, so you can call into the vaccine tracking registry under Florida Shots, and you can ask to have your data removed. You are also supposed to, from your doctor, be told that you can be opted out of the tracking registry. We don't know if the doctors and medical community is in compliance with that, but
well, I think we can guess.
Right? Yeah. And so parents need to be, you know, aware that that data is being shared with your government. Your child's private medical information is being uploaded and putting into a government database. And we can talk another day about the social credit system and the impact of this. What happened in 2021 was our federal government, when they put COVID vaccines in the process, they actually went to each state and said, hey, you've got to hand over your vaccine tracking information to us in order to receive these COVID vaccines. So now that information is being extracted and pulled up into the federal government. So our private medical information has got a direct line all the way up into NIH and the CDC and whatnot. So there's grave concerns about that. But what that bill passing back in 2019 told us was that we now need to go on the offensive. We can no longer sit back, watch these bills, and then try to fight them down. We need to empower ourselves with the proper right legislation that needs to pass through to ensure that we are being protected, we the people. So we actually got proactive and work with a legislator to create a bill that would prevent discrimination against individuals based off of their vaccination status. And included in that language that we had requested was the restriction from being able to be documented. So no one can share, they call it now the vaccine passports, but you can't use your licensure, you can't use any government ID to, you know, share your vaccination status. And while the bill in itself, SB 364, which would have protected all of these employees that got hit and harmed and removed, both in the healthcare institutions and the private sector, as well as our firemen down there in Orange County, across the state, we would have had those protections in place. That bill did not move. But what did move was subsequently to the closure of the April 2021 legislative session, they did take some of the language that we had embedded within SB 364 and moved it into what's now known as SB 2006, which was our language, the vaccine passport language. So you cannot be required to provide that documentation to anybody. It's simply against the law. So we knew that that was helpful. It was not, I would like to say, the full Monty, but it was definitely a bill that was very beneficial for us in a lot of different
respects.
Oh,
take your victories. Take your victories where you can, because right? It's never absolute. Yeah, absolutely. This is politics. It's a sport. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. And we have the vaccine tracking on our website, Health Freedom Florida. Mm-hmm. And we will share this with you, Greg, but we do have a repealer bill. We just want that stricken out. We, the people, should not have, and there's no need for our government to have our private medical information. Period, stop, and there. And also, it will protect us from getting put forth into any federal government database that will then potentially go up into, you know, the WHO and those types of organizations. If some of that higher legislation at the federal level were to pass through, which I think is called 550, Bailey, you would probably know that better than me.
HR 550.
Right, which is basically saying, hey, we're going to give them the power, right, and we're going to give them the data at a global level about us, which i.e. ties into, we want to stop any.
Oh, where'd you go?
Uh-oh.
Oh, that happens. Call back. She's on a roll, too.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was, darn it.
That's okay. Mo, you there? Yeah. Well, what
this
I was going to tell her.
I just want to add to what she's saying. I think
it's
important that we really, I mean, she put quite a bit of emphasis on this tracking bill, but just as she was saying, there, what reason is there, right? What reason is there for anything that they do? And so we need to look at what the reason is that they wanted to put the state of Florida and the people on it and their medical information on a list, right? I have mm-hmm. two kids, and interesting the sequence of events, right? We were fighting against this before COVID was even a thing, and then suddenly it becomes a thing, and it's all the conversation of who's vaccinated and who's not vaccinated and for what purpose. And originally when we were addressing this, we wanted to make sure that our children were safe because we don't want our children to be discriminated against if they don't have all of their childhood shots. Now suddenly it's an issue for every single adult in the state of Florida that their vaccination status against the COVID vaccine is recorded and it's being shared with the government. We know who they're sharing it with. And so I think it really just comes down to the simple fact that we have to pay very close attention to what's going on with these bills and what is being passed and go on that offensive and ensure that if things like this pass, that we're putting bills together in place to help protect us so that nothing can happen as a result of it. So not only are we trying to reverse what's been written, but also put us in a position so that we can't be discriminated against even if we're still on this list just based on our health status.
Yeah.
Now, doesn't HIPAA cover that?
Bailey.
Isn't that already covered by the HIPAA things? I mean, I'm not so familiar, but are they just ignoring it?
HIPAA is not what we thought it is. There's a wonderful group called Citizens Council for Health Freedom, mm-hmm. and Twyla Braze, she runs that group, and she has an amazing article on HIPAA that she gives you like the top 20 reasons HIPAA is a lie to the American public. And HIPAA mm-hmm. protects really hospitals and doctors. It actually does not protect the American people. So HIPAA actually doesn't even come into any of this, which is just like mind blowing. I think that was one of, you know, I was awakened to many of the things, but I think HIPAA was one of the things I had no idea that what it truly does. So I would recommend to take a look at what she's got written out there. And she knows this like the back of her hand. But I wanted to just add in what Tiffany was saying about this. The reason they were doing all of this data, this infrastructure here in the state and other states, many other states fought the same bill. But there's this HR 550 congressional bill that was introduced January of 2021, because what they're trying to do is instead of redoing all of this, instead of, you know, creating a new system, they're just trying to connect all of our systems together. So they're really just trying to create the infrastructure to use it against us. And we saw what the WHO has been up to. WHO has been trying to, you know, do all these interesting things through their amendments and through their new treaty of trying to be the lead and saying you no longer have sovereignty, you no longer have choice.
Yeah, people believe this nonsense.
We're going to come in.
Yes. They don't. Yeah. The Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. It supersedes any international agreement.
Yes.
And people are running around saying, oh, the WHO's going to take over, the WHO's controlling. Nonsense. You know, it's like when the Supreme Court,
right.
I'll use a perfect example, Roe v. Wade never applied to American citizens of the states. It wasn't legitimate. They had no authority. The Supreme Court can't make law. Only the Congress can.
Yes.
That was never enforceable. Right. And yet it was enforced for 2 years. The assumptions are stronger than truth. People assume that because the Supreme Court says it, it must be true. That's a bunch of nonsense. They had slavery legalized for 100 years. All right?
Right. Correct.
You know, and the WHO has no power over us. The WHO has no power over us.
Even in
none.
This Roe v. Wade overturn, they even state that there's a lot of Supreme Court bill or Supreme Court writings I'm sorry, I don't even know what it says, but what they've come out with, they're looking to go back and reread.
Oh, yeah.
Because even they stated in their own statement that we need to go back because there's a lot that the Constitution, you know, it was skewed.
Yep. Look up the term substantive due process. That's liberal speak for we're going to make up rights where we want them. Okay. And so
mm-hmm.
that's where they got
gay,
you know, they made a right for gay marriage, but marriage isn't a right. And they forgot the
right
part. Okay. It's contract.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and so all these things that they're doing, this is my ballpark, Supreme Court. I'm going to do a show on reversing Plyler v. Doe, which is the case where the Supreme Court ordered that all illegal aliens be educated in our schools so they'll grow up to be good adults. Well, you can't, what they basically mandated is an amnesty program. And they can't do that either. Okay. So all this stuff's going on.
Right.
Mo, are you back? Oh, no. I don't want to have, your line's still alive.
I have a feeling her phone died. That happens a lot when she and I are on the phone. So,
uh-oh. Well, had I known, I would have. Yeah. Well, here's what I want to suggest, though. She made a really interesting. Go ahead.
Sure.
I was going to say, okay. We've got one more bill on our website that I'm perfectly
yes.
comfortable talking about. It's obviously just a conscientious bill that, you know, we've heard a lot from Senator Lauren Book is our senator who likes to submit this bill that takes away our religious exemptions. And a lot of what she likes to say for her reasoning is, well, you know, all of you are using religion in the wrong way, which she has no right to say that. So we said, okay, well, if it's as simple as you think people are using religion when they're not supposed to, why don't we just introduce a conscientious bill? So we've got that up on our website as well.
Yep.
That we would like to try to, you know, see what we can get some traction on that, because then they can no longer use this really ridiculous notion that we're using the religious freedom in the wrong way.
Well, they can't say that. That's establishing a religion itself. It's establishing a government religion. You know, I would argue
that's
that from the First Amendment ground, that they're violating the free exercise of religion. You know, the fact that a religious exemption exists, that it's not up to them to judge. You know, then they say, well, it's not a sincere objection. Okay. That's weasel wording. That's
right.
BS.
That's
like when the government.
It is.
It's like when they mandate a vaccine and then people in the service object to it. They say that's not a lawful order. And the government says, well, it is a lawful order because we gave it, you know, therefore it's lawful. But the agency that gives the order cannot certify the order as valid.
Right.
That's a conflict
exactly.
of interest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. First Amendment. That's complete. But I don't even think you need the conscientious. I mean, I want to take a look more at it. So I'm kind of interested. I want to see. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, we put that out there when Lauren Book went on her tirade. So Senator Lauren Book. So we do have it. It's an option, but it's, you know, definitely not what our focus is. Really trying to get you know, a vaccine status as a protected class at this point, because look at what they're doing to people. Even in the state of Florida, where we supposedly have these exemptions and these protections, we still see so much discrimination. People are told that, you know, they still have to wear their masks, and Disney people, poor Disney people, still have to wear goggles, and they're not allowed to take them off until they actually leave Disney premises. So there's still absolute discrimination happening. Just because there's an exemption process doesn't stop discrimination from happening. So we still are chasing after that anti-discrimination bill for a vaccine status.
Hey, this is Mo. I'm so sorry. I got picked off. I don't know what happened. I was on a roll though, so I apologize.
Yes, you were.
It's the FBI.
I don't know
it's the FBI KGB.
Me.
They don't like what you're doing.
Right.
So members of the FBI KGB, just call like everybody else does. You can talk to me. It's okay.
That's great.
Sorry.
So sorry. I don't know where I lost you, but hopefully I got the information about the language out.
Well, it's on the podcast. You can check everything you missed. But I want to see these. I'm having just a personal suggestion here. I'm having a little trouble. You've got summaries of the bills. There's not really a place to click on them. You've got kind of background. If you could put on your website a bill with a link to the actual language of it, because I'm a real nerd when it comes to that kind of stuff. John knows numbers. I know words.
Oh, it's not,
at least I think so.
We do have that. It's underneath the where you see. Yeah, right. Sorry. Go ahead, Bailey.
No, it's okay. Right after and tell me, maybe you're seeing it differently and we need to see it from a different perspective, but right after the summary, there's just a downloadable link that says the bill name. Do you not see that?
Okay, I'm looking at, it says Health Freedom Florida Anti-Discrimination Legislative Remedies, that one, the PDF?
Yes. Oh,
you've
already put it on the PDF. Yeah.
And that's
okay.
The language. That's the language you would present to a legislator.
Okay. Yeah, I've got that. My problem, I got so busy, I haven't read all your legislation. I figured we'd talk about it, and then I can go back and take a look at it.
Sure.
So we got your bills. The thing, I'm glad Mo's back, because the comment I had for you was that you've gone to legislators. You've tried to inspire their drafting committees. You've tried to have them do the right thing. And the reason that Action Radio is here is to bypass all that. We'll do it. We'll do it together. We'll do it with you, for you, you know, you'll do it. We'll write our own bills. The whole point of this is to be able to give finished bills directly to the state legislatures to make their job as easy as possible, because they're lazy. They don't read their own legislation. They certainly don't write it. So we should. Because, you know, Pfizer's writing legislation. You know, lobbyists are writing legislation. You know, big tech's writing legislation. They've hired people for millions of dollars to do all this legalese crap, and I can do it for virtually nothing, you know, just my time and your time. And we put it on our website. Mo, how's that sound? You want to start writing bills?
Thank you. This is Mo. Yes. No, I think that's fantastic. I think if we can remove even any process having to go to a legislator to kind of create this bill because we are dependent upon it. For example, the one that we actually, for the medical discrimination, right, the civil rights statute where we're creating those protections that are being experienced that we know is pervasive and happening throughout the state, if we can, we had given that to a legislator and they put it into drafting services and there was a verbal commitment that that bill was going to be moved forward. They did not do that. So if we can negate it and we can actually prevent them from even having control over whether or not that language gets put into the next round of sessions would be great. I don't know if you guys heard, but one thing I do want to make sure I share before we move out of this piece here, underneath the civil rights statute language that we put in place, we know that, and I think, Bailey, you were sharing a little bit about the ongoing medical discrimination. And what I was sharing, I didn't, when I thought I was still on the show, was that...
Recap.
We know it's pervasive. We know it exists, and it's still continuing today. There is employment discrimination that she, Bailey, talked about. I heard her talking about Disney. We know that the insurance is being looked at right now. My son's caregiver, who I shared with you earlier, is vaccine injured. We have a wonderful woman that cares for him. She just got notified a few months back that her health insurance was going up $100 per month because she refused the COVID shot. This is, you know, $1,200 additional she's having to pay because she's decided that she did not want to inject an experimental vaccine into her body. It's outrageous. We have gotten reports from people who are understanding that their life insurance policy plans have been changing. We know that Florida is, you know, the mecca of, you know, long-term care facilities for the elderly. We've had multiple reports of individuals that have been told that they are going to either have to get the COVID shot or they're going to be removed from their housing. So we know that this is very substantially still in place, happening across a very pervasive endeavor. One of the things I will tell you, and I've learned with legislators, is that they're not going to stop for the anomaly. They're not going to put and create language that helps one or two one-off situations. So we created a campaign called medicalfreedomcoalition.org, and it's simply a portal that you go into and you can share your medical discrimination story. What we're using those for is to share them. We've shared them with the health department. We've shared them with legislators so that they understand that this is existing today, that there is a point of ongoing discrimination for those who are unvaccinated. And I don't know if you know this, that in special session, they protected the vaccinated from being discriminated against, but they did not do the same for the unvaccinated. So we need these stories so that it's heard loud and clear that it's existing, and we must put protections in place for those that have decided that they are making a different health choice path.
Interesting. Yeah, I've got two of your bills. I want to take a detailed look at them, but I think that, well, and here's my strategy too. This might help as well, that you're going to the legislature first. I go to the legislature last, and I go to the national debate, the national media. I put the bill out there. You know, when our constitutional amendment to remove the power of Congress to borrow money, the last place that is going is Congress, because they're going to instantly reject it. All right. But if everybody already knows about it, it's already in the media, everybody's already talking about it, it kind of puts them in a very different position. So we want to put the legislature, without threatening, without being nasty, but put them in a position where the bill that they're going to vote on is already known about by everybody in the public. So now it's a lot harder to start changing language, because we'll know, because we'll have the standard. We'll have the standard of your bill that will say, this is what, you know, in fact, we should create a civil right. We should put vaccine status or not, you know, as a protected civil right. And I also have bills for ideology and gun ownership as protected civil rights. You know, so there's a lot we can do with this. And so this is going to be fascinating. But I think that, you know, and in fact, as we're chatting, I snuck Tiffany a text on the Australian Bill of Rights I wrote with a woman, Jen Clark, in Australia. And there's a lot of body autonomy. There's a lot of everything from 5G protection to vax protection to everything else in new ways. And those rights you might be able to incorporate into your legislation here. So a lot of this stuff serves cross purposes, which is really fascinating. So you want to tell me about your two bills, or would you want to hear about vaccine product liability? Where would you all like to go?
Yeah, no, if I could just, so did you hear me talk at all about the vaccine tracking registry? I feel bad if I'm repeating myself, but
Tiffany
we do have,
Yeah, I think Tiffany talked about that.
Okay.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, great.
Tiffany, did you want to add anything, or do you want to?
And I think Mo, you went through most of it, so I think we heard you on that part for sure. I'm not sure where we lost you, but we did talk about it.
Okay.
Well, you'll find out on the podcast.
So really, like, the language was the Florida Vaccine Tracking Registry, and the importance of repealing that because of the multitude of ways that they can be using that data against us. And obviously the anti-discrimination segregation law, which would protect our vaccination status under the civil rights statute. So I think that's really powerful. And I know we talked a little bit about that. There is one other one that we've put out there, which is the Florida Conscientious Bill. So for students that are going into school, they have the right to get a religious medical exemption to prevent them from having to follow the vaccination schedule.
Right.
We just put together some language that would create a conscientious offering as well. And then lastly, there is one other piece of language that we are working on, and I think maybe this would be a great one, Greg, for us to help and work in conjunction with you, which is removing 20 years ago, underneath a previous so-called pandemic, our state instituted into law the right under emergency, under the state of an emergency. They had the right to vaccinate us, the right to quarantine us, the right to isolate us. We were successful in special session in November, and we've been talking about this for about 10 years once we uncovered through National Vaccine Information Center that this does exist to get it removed. We were in special session this November 2021 able to get the vaccination piece removed, which was a huge and significant win for the state of Florida.
But
however,
there's a flaw. There's a fatal flaw. And I want you to take a look at our bill, and I'll tell you exactly the problem, because it says they can take any means necessary. So the fact that they crossed out the words vaccine, all they have to then do is declare that vaccines are necessary. Even though it's taken out of the bill, it can still be put in under the any means necessary clause right before it.
Nice.
That's how they got you. They lied to you.
Still remained. Go ahead. What they did?
Oh,
sorry,
yeah. So this is why I wrote a separate bill. This is, and I look at this and say, wait a minute. You know, lights are going off and bells are going off in my head. And I say, wait a minute. They didn't do anything. They just took out the word vaccine. But when you leave by, you know, taking any means necessary, well, that means they can do anything they want, which includes vaccines, because they didn't prohibit vaccines. They just took out vaccines as a stated option.
Right.
That's the lie in that bill.
Quarantine and isolation. So the conversation needs by any means necessary should be stricken in its entirety, inclusive of, right?
Funny you should say that. Should say that. You know, it's right there in my bill. It's all there. You guys are going to love it. Yeah.
Nice.
We have so much work to do. Yeah. All right. Let me switch over here.
Good segue to you then.
Segue to me, yes. You know, we're doing this. You'd think we actually organized this the way it's working out. And so we're going to get John, Jim, and Brian back in this, our doctors. But I really want to talk about this bill, especially if anybody's going to a convention, if anybody's going to make a presentation, if anybody wants to present this to their group so they can present this. We need this in the media. Again, media, you know, national debate, then the legislature. That seems to be the way these work. So I wrote this back in March 31st of 2021, the Vaccine Manufacturer Full Product Liability Restoration Act of 2021. And you know the rationale for it, I don't have to tell you, but one of the things I get rid of is the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, because why should taxpayers pay something that the manufacturer should pay for? So the second paragraph says, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which we know as theirs, should not be funded by taxpayer money. This program should not exist. This program would not exist if vaccine manufacturers were fully liable for their products and they had no immunity from civil lawsuit to enforce compliance with product safety laws, regulations, and standards. Therefore, our Vaccine Manufacturer Full Product Liability Restoration Act shall delete the following section of law covering this program. And this John will get this because he loves the numbers. 42 U.S. Code Section 300AA-10-Establishment of Program. A, B, and C are deleted now. There's no reason why you folks can't cite the exact section and title of law, both in the Florida Code and the U.S. Code. They're not that hard to look up. And if you have a question, you know, I find it fairly quickly. But that's what you want to do, because now it looks like a real bill, okay? Because everybody, you know, if you ever look at a real bill, a real bill in the sense that it's already in the legislature, it says title and section. This, you know, law shall be hereby amended by striking this, adding this, you know, adding this new section, removing this section, whatever. That's how they do it. Well, we do it exactly the same way, okay? So I strike out the various program and replace it. And another thing, that's gone. And I'll get to my proposal on a bit. Liability, immunity, declaration of emergency. This declaration by the Secretary of Health and Human Services to grant liability immunity to manufacturers, distributors, program planners, and qualified persons and their officials, agents, and employees in the United States is hereby repealed and abolished. Full product liability responsibility is restored to those parties mentioned here, subjecting them to any civil action brought for damages for a vaccine or vaccine-related side effects, reaction, injury, death, or other compensational event. So it's gone. You with me so far? Questions, comments?
Yes.
Isn't this fun? All right.
Excellent.
So, current law I state, and obviously I'm going to be repealing that. I shall give you the new law, our amended law, 42 U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22- Standards of Responsibility, General Rule. State law shall apply to any civil action brought for damages for a vaccine or vaccine-related side effect, reaction, injury, death, or other compensational event in any state court. So they have a preemption. They said the states can't bring the laws if it's prohibited in federal law. Well, I say yes, they can. Okay. B, Section B, side effects, reactions, and injuries, and deaths. Here's the cool part. One, vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in any civil action for damages arising from a vaccine or vaccine-related side effects, reaction, you get the idea, okay? And that includes testing and evaluation, manufacturer testing and evaluation, certification, authorization, approval, distribution, administration, use, storage, transportation, or other responsibility of the manufacturer relating to their vaccines. So basically, I took out where it says shall not be liable and just said shall be fully liable. With me so far? Questions, comments?
Yeah, so my question about that, and this is Mo, sorry. I wanted to, so you're talking about two different pieces of legislation.
No, this is one bill.
One, okay. So is it federal level and state level?
No, this is federal, but you can adapt it to the state level. That might be something you guys might want to work on. Because state law and federal law is different. This is federal because I'm getting rid of the VAERS program, which is federal. I've taken out their limited liability declaration of emergency. That's abolished. And I took out everywhere in the federal law where it says shall not be liable and replaced it with shall be fully liable. It's basically what the bill does. Still the same subject, though.
Right.
So it's a little more complicated. But the vaccine, that's one part. And the other part, direct warnings, vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in any civil action for damages arising from a vaccine. You know, it's basically the same thing. That includes warnings. And then, of course, preemption. No state may establish or enforce a law, regulation, or policy which prohibits an individual from bringing a civil action against a vaccine manufacturer for damages. So where they say the states can't do it, I say the states can do it. Basically, it's a straight reversal of everything that's in federal law right now. And this is ready to go. Title, section, law, repeal, the old law, the new law, the introduction, the justification, the rationale, it's all there.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's really good.
I love this bill. Oh, I forgot to put the endorsements. It's endorsed by.
I mean, it's a dream, that's for sure. So, Greg, how long have you been helping put bills like this together? I'm curious as to how many you guys have actually put together and what happens after they've been written?
A lot of things. Each one's different. I first wrote a ballot petition for California maybe 20 years ago called the Self-Preservation Act. It was basically a concealed carry, shall issue kind of law. So I've been dabbling in this since college. I was on the legislative committee. We actually wrote a bill to put a student on the Board of Trustees at the University of Massachusetts. So I've been kind of hanging around this sort of stuff for years. Took constitutional law, did a Washington internship, and then kind of left it for, I don't know, 20 years or so, and then kind of got back into it when I was on a bike ride in 2014, and it suddenly struck me that the problem with talk radio is that all they do is talk. They don't take any action. I said, what we need is action radio. Well, that started this. You know, that's how fast it happened. And then I thought, well, how do we take action? What do we do? And how can, you know, and then the citizen legislature idea came about 2 years later, and then the website, and how are we going to put it all together? And this is an evolution. But I basically created the format for citizen legislation to answer your question. Introduction or rationale, the old law, the new law, single subject, creates more freedom, applies to everybody. That's basically it. It's really pretty straightforward and simple. I'm surprised that I'm kind of happy that no one else thought of this first, but that's the format. It's so simple and so accessible to anybody that I can take anybody with an idea and turn it into a bill.
So this is Bailey. I have a quick question for you.
Sure. I'll make it a long one. Come on, we got time.
No, after you're at this point, you know, and let's say you've already gone to the media and you've drum up support, do you have legislators you work with, or do you just, how do you get it out there? And because clearly you're going after Congress and most of these bills.
A lot of them, yes, yes. Well, I have my own Congressman, Matt Gaetz, so I'm hoping to get back on the show and be able to propose these directly to them. He already has all the bills.
Okay.
You know, we had Brandon House on last week. Brandon House produced the election fraud movies for Lindell. I'm hoping to get Mike on the show.
Mm-hmm.
If Mike comes on the show, I'm hoping to get Donald Trump on the show. If Donald Trump endorses Action Radio, we're going to have a whole lot of attention here really fast. And that's very possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where I'm going with this. So if we get to the legislators respond to pressure. And the best pressure is conservative media, conservative talk shows. So I'm hoping that folks like, you know, Sebastian Gorka and Mark Levin pick up on this. All right. But there's no guarantee because I've written them for years and nothing's happened. So like anything else, anything new, you've got to break through. And so I want to get, you know, small media, big media, huge media, just work with everybody I can. Hopefully everybody will be sharing the show. You know, sponsors will create listeners. Listeners will create bigger sponsors. And that as more and more people start writing and talking about this, and the groups that you talked, the ones you mentioned, the vaccine folks, anybody can take that vaccine bill and send it out to their members and say, please copy this link and send it to every legislator. I would go with Senator Ron Johnson, who's probably the most likely person to help us. I want to go back on a panel. And when folks like Brian and Jim are on panels, and Ben Marble, who's not here today, I wish he were, and Judy Mikovits, when you all appear on panels, you know, now's the time to say, look, you know, because everybody deals with problems. We've raised complaining to an art form, and I say that all the time. But it's true. You know, everybody knows what the problems are. Okay, we document them all the time. But we've got the solutions right here. And it's the most frustrating thing in the world to me that we're not in solution mode. We're still in problem mode. Well, let me get Brian. Let's get him on the conversation because I know he has to leave at some point. Activism. Can you present this to panels? Same question to Jim. Same question to John with your websites and your podcasts and videos. Well, let's go. Brian, Jim, and John. Got any ideas for how to get this out there? This just
Of course, I would love to help you get it out there.
Okay. You endorsed it.
Sorry.
Your name's there. Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Judy Mikovits, Chief Jerome Bell, who's running for Congress, Dr. Deborah Viglione, and Dr. Brian Hardis, right on the endorsement list. Jim, we'll get you too.
Yep. So we're
go ahead.
Very excited to help you in any way, period. I am actually very motivated to help. There are some things, though, that I don't know. So any encouragement, any direction is always helpful. Point me in the right direction. Tell me what you need, who you need to get introduced to.
Yeah, tell everybody share the link. Share the link with me.
How we can make
that legislators. That's it. That's all you have to do. Share the bill link. Yeah.
Rock and roll. So I guess it's just getting it to as many audience people as possible to pass it on to their legislators. And you know, I've learned over the years with patients for 20 years, most people need to be spoon-fed. Like, give them, this is what we need you to do. Spell it out very easily. And so anything that we can actually brainstorm would be very helpful, like in the way of just doing QR code links. Here, go here. Come to our site. Go to this podcast.
Yeah, see,
this
I need
show,
you guys for that.
This website.
That's not my area. Yeah.
Just anything that makes it easy. I always get people to help me make it as easy as possible and get things around the world in a flurry as fast as possible.
Copy the building.
So anything we can brainstorm to do that would be very beneficial.
Well, you help too because I was on
and
your
I'm
show. You know, so that really helps. But but you need that daily reminder. You know, you need to say, you know, and don't forget to send you the link to vaccine manufacturer full product liability to your member of Congress and your local media and major media and your talk shows. You know, just that kind of an announcement every week, and just put the bill up on the screen. That will help. You know,
and
people
and
thinking.
Greg, just,
go ahead, Tiffany.
I just want to add that I think that you bring up an important point in the power of public pressure. Right, it's one thing to send the bill to your legislator a couple times, it's quite another when thousands of people do it simultaneously, right? And so
millions.
I
want millions.
I'm
serious. Millions of people will change everything.
And I think it's important, and there's really incredible organizations that focus on reaching legislators, and I think that's probably a good time, Bailey, to talk a little bit about Stand for Health Freedom and how they go about doing that, because I think that there's some opportunities for collaboration here when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Bailey?
Yeah, I was absolutely thinking the same thing. Stand for Health Freedom is all about action. We don't like to do a lot of jibber jabber. We want to get things accomplished. So, for instance, the bill HR 419, this is the one that would defund the WHO in Congress.
We started to focus on it. There was only 13 co-sponsors on the bill, and at this point there's 49. So we're drumming up a lot of action and attraction. And you know, even if, especially in this congressional, you know, where we're at right now, we're not going to pass these bills. We don't have any more supporters on our side in Congress, which is actually the other arm of what we're doing is we are doing what we call Vote for Health Freedom. So it's a project through Stand for Health Freedom. And we are endorsing and recommending candidates who are willing to stand and fight for health freedom, not just stand, but they've got to fight for it as well. And we've recommended over 700 candidates so far in the primary elections, which we think the primary elections are key for us winning. And we've got a huge assortment running on to the general election, and we're still going. We still have many primary elections to go, but we do think that this is the pivotal time. Right now, we need to get these elected officials who support us and who would take bills like this to Congress or to state, and get some of these things passed, because it is the action we need. So as soon as you started talking about how talk radio is a lot of talk and you needed action, it was really resonating with what we do as well. And that's getting people to do something. You know, don't just sit and inform yourself. Let's inform others in an actionable step. So I agree with you on all of that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If you haven't got a chance to check it out, what they do is they make it as easy as possible for people to reach out to their legislators. So they have all the contact information, emails, and they even draft the message. So all you have to do is put your email address in, put your name on the line, and then click send. And so they make it, just like Dr. Artis was mentioning, the easier the better for some people. Maybe not everybody has the confidence to write the bills, but if we can share what's in them and they can stand behind it, and then we can get it up onto Stand for Health Freedom, there's a possibility that you can get that delivered to everybody that needs to be seeing it and in mass, right? It's super simple for people.
So all we need to do is have the bill link included in those emails. So click, you know, if you say this bill puts full product liability on vaccine makers, put the bill link included in the email. So when they click, not only are they sending a message, they're sending a bill link. They're sending a solution with it.
Correct. Although, you know, our platform is generally with bills who have already been submitted. So that's the best form because we're going after the elected officials. But that doesn't mean we can't apprise people of what is, you know, coming up next, what bill we're talking about that we want to get into session. So there's absolutely opportunity to collaborate. We are over 500 million, I wish. We are over 500,000 strong and literally growing by the 10 to 20,000 a month, because obviously this issue has become incredibly huge since the pandemic. And so it seems like at this point we've really got a lot of people who are willing to take the action. It's just we've got to get these legislators, these policymakers in place so that action can get taken, basically.
Well, if everybody goes to their town meetings, their town hall meetings, and says, what are you doing about vaccine product liability? See, that's not even in the news. Nobody's talking about it because they know Congress is never going to pass that bill. So it's not even on anybody's radar screen. But if we start announcing and all these groups start coming out and your 500,000 people say, wait a minute, this bill's that problem. You know, we don't have to have a VAERS program. We don't have to have our taxes taken. You know, this is a – and here's the other thing, too, people forget. The minute this bill gets out in the public, what do you think is going to happen to those mandates? Big Pharma thinks for a second that they're going to lose their immunity. What do you think is going to happen to those mandates? What do you think is going to happen to those products? They're going to be off the shelf in seconds.
Exactly.
They're not going to be giving anything out. You know, that's all going to be gone. As soon as they're liable, that's the one thing. In fact, I had an article from Children's Health Defense on Uruguay. And the one thing that that they insist there is they insist everywhere, no product liability. You start talking product liability. You know, it's I could just see the boardroom at Pfizer now. You know, so just getting this out there, just the idea of it is so critical. Because if Congress thinks that their constituents are thinking about vaccine product liability, they have to then weigh that. They have to weigh the votes that they're going to lose versus the campaign money they're going to lose. And the only way we're going to win is that the votes, we have to make the votes cost them more than the loss of campaign funds and their lobbyists. That's how we win.
That's good.
Yeah, and we can win. Because how much does it cost to send an email with a bill link in it? It costs nothing. Most people already have the internet. They've already got the email. They've already got the service. It doesn't cost people anything. They don't have to meet. They don't have to gather. They don't have to go to a convention. They don't have to read a whole bunch of stuff. They don't have to do anything. You give them a simple summary like you guys are talking about. You put the bill link in. You say, Congress, I want full product vaccine liability. Boom. gone.
I have found another method that I find to be surprisingly effective.
What's that?
And that is you can publicly shame them on Twitter.
Okay.
So most
I'm
of,
game.
Most of these con- – yeah. So for example, I have been posting the EUA, the language from the EUA, and I can post to Xavier Becerra, Rochelle Walensky, and everybody sees it on Twitter. And so when I post what I post on Twitter, I'll ask, for example, you know, do 13 children dead in New Jersey constitute a pediatric medical emergency that warrants an EUA? And what I do is I put a screenshot of the EUA with the language in it. It shows, you know, it's supposed to do this, right? Well, if it doesn't do this, isn't the EUA invalid? And because you can do it in public and you can call out Xavier Becerra, Rochelle Walensky, all these different, and your Congress people. So, for example, earlier I tweeted out a link to writeyourlaws.com.
Ooh, thank you.
Right,
appreciate
on Twitter. Right, on Twitter, right? So I put that out on Twitter, and now people can share that. And what we could do is take a bill and then name the Congress people. And that's what I've been doing. So when I post these statistics, I post them and I call out the governor of the state where I'm posting the data. So if I'm posting it for New Jersey, I put Phil Murphy in the tweet.
So see, that's perfect, because then you can put the bill link in. You can put Dr. Zelenko on my on reforming. Just put it right there in the tweet. So I want this to be normal. We want to normalize the process of here's the problem, here's the solution. And the problem is right now it's just here's the problem. Everybody's tweeting out the problems. But if we can link it to here's the solution, that is so critical. That's going to advance it. So people start thinking that it's normal to put citizen legislation into Congress. I want people – that's a normalization process. We're nowhere near yet, but we need to be there. So the more you tweet and the more everybody else tweets, the more, you know, Brian and his TV show talks about this and Jim and his conventions and everybody who does everything that we do, the more this is talked about, that we normalize that we write the bills we consent to be governed by and we put them in the legislative process and say, here, this is what we want you to look at, study, and vote for. And by the way, there's a midterm election coming up in November, you know. So if you want, you can publicly humiliate them, but give them a way out. Give them the solution. Say, look, if you really want to be a good member of Congress, this will help.
Well,
so
Secretary Becerra can terminate the EUA at any moment. They simply have to determine that there's no longer a medical emergency. And what I'm hoping to do with this group here is to establish that, A, there's no pediatric medical emergency, and, B, there's no obstetric medical emergency.
Well, that's been established. I didn't mean to cut you short on that.
So
but
put the needle
we've
down.
We've really got that. Yeah. But then you've got to do something with it. It's got to be – let me pull up my FDA bill real quickly here.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you what I'm doing with it. So I'm taking the data. I take the data from the CDC. I take the EUA. I put them in one tweet.
Oh,
and
perfect.
Then I send it to Becerra, to Walensky.
Oh.
And so this is on Twitter. So
you
they are publicly being called out. Right. Well, that's the issue. Why are they not responding? If there's 13 kids dead in New Jersey, is that a pediatric medical emergency? Is an EUA warranted? How? And now what I don't have, so Dr. Thorpe, I don't have the data on how many pregnant women have died with COVID. I haven't been able to put that query together in Wonder and pull that number out. I don't know.
Jim?
Do you have access to that from the obstetrics societies that you're a member of? Do you have that data?
They're withholding it. The responses that I got back in 2020 when I was scared to death they were going to roll this vaccine out and ultimately push it in pregnant women and I tried to debate them regarding these numbers. The only thing I would get is ad hominem attacks. I think that Tiffany Prado is exactly right. You know, they've they have really jerry-rigged the assays, you know, the PCR assay, of course, we've talked about on this show before, is totally corrupted because it all depends on what the primers are, as Judy Mikovits has said, and it all depends on how many cycle lengths. You know, you can pick up a COVID-19 positive PCR test. Oh, that's the gold standard. Well, no, not if you run 30 cycles. It's going to pick up COVID-19 everywhere you go, whoever you test, whatever surface you test. So I you know, going back to your prior question and bringing this up, I'm really happy for Action Radio and for you and Tiffany and Bailey and Maureen to be talking about all of this legislative stuff. But I'm really happy that you're doing it, but it's just depressing and frustrating to me because nothing ever gets done with the politicians on both sides of the aisle. They're all a bunch of crooks, and they don't really care about my mom's dying, my fetus is dying. They don't care about it because if they did, they would respond to the hundreds of personal letters that I've sent them. And not one politician or congressman or representative of mine has ever returned. I've sent them massive amounts of stuff. So you guys go at it. You know, you can knock yourselves out. I'm not interested in it because it's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my time to even vote at this point in time because you're dealing with criminals, and criminals don't follow your laws. You can pass all the laws you want, but they're not going to pass them. They've been blowing off the laws for over 20 years and laughing at you and me. So I'm going to do, you know, on my drum is I'm going to beat the data and keep announcing the data. And you know, if one of these crooked politicians, even the conservatives in Florida, you know, I've contacted the attorney general. I've contacted the governor. I've contacted every single one of the representatives. I've contacted the LADAPO. They don't care. They don't care about the women and children of Florida. If they did, all they would have to do is call me up and listen to what I have to say, and they'd ban the injection in Florida. But nobody's done that. Nobody cares. So I'll keep doing what I do best, and I want you guys to keep doing what you do best.
Yeah, we're going to make them care, though. That's the whole point of going to the public first. The legislation, citizen legislation starts with the citizens, then it goes to the media, and then it goes to the legislators and the government officials because they,
yeah,
you're right, they don't care. Tiffany?
And I think we need to recognize that we need to go back to the traditional Constitution and recognize that they work for us. And I think that that's why I understand where you're coming from. This is Tiffany, by the way. But I think that that makes it all the more important what Bailey and Stand for Health Freedom are doing with all of those new legislators coming in and why those initial preliminary votes are important, because it's only going to get to a place where we can reach them if we put the right people in office. And that means getting rid of all of the rhinos and all of the people who are completely consumed and bought and evil, right? I mean, we have to recognize that as long as the Constitution is in place, we have to do everything we can to try to take advantage of it. And that first and foremost starts with getting the right people in office who are going to take these bills into consideration and protect us. There might not be the right people in office right now, but we do still have the ability to try to get them in as of now. And we should do that in a layered approach along with all the other work that we're doing to try to make that happen, because while we still can, right, before it's completely irrelevant. And I can't bring myself to believe that it is completely null and void yet as a U.S. Constitution. And as long as we have the right to vote, we need to make sure that we're paying attention and putting those people, the right people in office.
Yeah. And the people that have not gotten office
opinion,
yet.
It's just my opinion that that's voiding in the ocean. Nobody's listened. Listen, you have the most strictest gun laws in the nation, in the city, and people are getting killed every week. And they don't, criminals, of which are our legislators, they're criminals. They're breaking laws, and all they want to do is strip us of our liberties and our freedoms. I'm not interested in wasting my time with politicians. They're all crooked. They don't care. They put laws in place, and they don't follow them. There's two sets of laws. So I appreciate
judo?
Your guys' tenacity with this.
How about judo, though? Instead of adding new laws, what if we can take away the existing laws? What if we can null and void, nullify the thing that's in place that makes the vaccine viable? Without the EUA, there's no vaccines for children.
John,
well, that's what my bills do. Every one of these bills takes away the law that causes the problem and replaces it better language.
But I don't think we need a bill. I don't think we need a bill to get rid of the EUA.
The murders. They don't care about any of this stuff. It's all a waste of time. They don't care about any of this stuff.
Hey, this is Mo. I just wanted to jump in just with a slightly different perspective on the, and I know you're speaking to specifically the EUA shots underneath, the COVID pandemic. But, you know, one of the things I heard the word ban vaccines. While I personally am anti-vax for myself, I am for choice for others. However, I don't think others fully understand, right, the dangers of what these vaccinations are doing to their children as well as to themselves. And so we believe that if we can educate people, then they will ultimately decide that these vaccines are not worth the risk that they pose to the children as well as to ourselves. I think that it's a difficult position for, let's just say, and this is not in defense of any health department by all means. I have had vast problems with health departments, but I would suggest that to use the word to ban would be to say, I'm not going to give you the opportunity for these parents and for these individuals who think, unfortunately so, that these vaccinations are life-saving. And we know that that's not true. We know that that data doesn't support that. We know all of that. But I think you get yourself into a liability by saying, hey, listen, they should come out and ban it. What they should do, and I think is what I heard you saying very well, is that they need the data. They need to constantly go back to the data, because the data would tell everyone that these are not effective, nor are they warranted to give to any child, let alone any person. I'd also throw out there that there is a big blast of the word Comirnaty, which was FDA approved yet not available. And yep. So when you look at EUA,
I just want to interject. Okay. I want to interject. I want to interject and just say something in response to you, Maureen. And that, I totally respect where you're coming from. But the fact of the matter is, in 1976, when I was a second-year medical student, the swine flu vaccine was administered. Okay, there were 25 deaths. It should be banned. It was banned for 25 deaths. Okay, now Pfizer has come out. We've found in Pfizer's own internal communications that there were 1,223 adult deaths, and 50% of the pregnant women were damaged, were hurt with the vaccine, and that was just in the first 80 to 90 days. It should have been banned. There should be a moratorium on it.
Yes, and I think what I'm referencing is the sequence of those events, right? You know, who has the ability to be able to say the ban versus, I think to your point, is that data needs to be there in support of the words being banned, right? So when they speak to it, then they actually have the justification behind it. But if they don't have that data, or they choose not to share the data,
They have all the data. It's been published all over the world. They have the data. They don't care. They're killers.
So what I'd like to do, Mo, is take state by state, because right now the pendulum has swung more towards states' rights, right? So in a state like Florida, could somebody like DeSantis say, as far as we're concerned in Florida, there is no pediatric medical emergency, there is no obstetric medical emergency, and so the authorizations for Comirnaty and Spikevax, which is the name of the Moderna product, the EUA for those is null and void because there is no medical emergency here. we now know after 2.5 years what the data says. I've got 25 kids under 5 dead in Florida. I'm not going to vaccinate millions of children based on 25 deaths. I've got more kids were eaten by alligators last year than died from COVID.
Yeah.
How many kids were killed by malpractice?
That data is so powerful. That data is so powerful to share in sequence with, you know, the fact that that should be known and understood. Null and void.
Again,
especially the EOE versus Comirnaty.
Well, so Comirnaty, the Pfizer product, and Spikevax for children. So what they just authorized this past week or two was 6 months to 5 years old under EUA. We all want that to stop. And I understand what Jim is saying is, you know, they're lawbreakers, kind of like the, you know, the shooters are, and they're not going to respect the law. So passing a new bill and all that will take, I think if we had some oomph behind this, whether it's Ladapo, DeSantis, Bobby Kennedy Jr., whoever it is, somebody who's recognizable who says, wait a second, in this state, there is no pediatric medical emergency, there is no obstetric medical emergency, there's no data to support it. So there is no authorization for the, and again, I think states' rights. And DeSantis is leading the charge. You guys know that. He's the one.
He hasn't returned any of my inquiries, neither have any of his staff. So he doesn't
that's
care.
Why I like
all he does. He contacts me several times a day to try to get my vote, and I'll raise my middle finger at him because I don't. If he cared about children and my patients in Florida, he would have his staff return my call, and so would Gates, and so would DeLadapo, and so would Ashley. What's her face? The Attorney General. None of them care. None of them care.
Tiffany, what can we do, Tiffany, to get through? Can we go through Ladapo? How do we get someone to lead this charge to say the EUA has to be deconstructed now? It has to be.
You know, Ladapo doesn't care. I have Ladapo's personal phone number. I've contacted him many times. He doesn't care. DeSantis doesn't care. He just wants to get elected. None of them care. They want their
hold
power.
Hold on, Jim, because, you know, as much as I love your comments, this is we have to take action. I mean, I'm not going to sit back and not do it. And so we're going to make them care. And so we just have to do that. But, Jim, John had a good question for Tiffany. Have a little faith. Trust me. You know, I got a brand new thing. Look where we are now. You know, we've already got victories. Tiffany, go ahead.
And I think at the end of the day, we're just really frustrated because when it comes down to it, when we take a look at all of the things we know, it's not hard to figure out the fact that these vaccines are not only not working, but they're causing serious, serious harm. And so knowing that it's just as easy as taking a look at the numbers that they post on their own websites that are telling us that truth is infuriating. So when we sit here and we talk about legislation around trying to protect ourselves from vaccines and depending on legislators to do that for us, when ultimately they have the same information that we do, and if they just looked at it, they were of good conscience, then they would see that there's absolutely no reason for it. And so I understand the frustration, and it is a really kind of disgusting predicament that we're in right now where we have to go to legislation to try to end things like this. But what, from my perspective, I think that this has to be a multi-layered approach. I think that we have to continue to get the right people in office in hopes that they may be the ones that do look at the data. I think we have to continue to write the bills and try to modify the ones that are out there. I think we have to continue to scream from the rooftops about how dangerous this is so that we can reach the people and help them make their own decisions for themselves, and then also try to work to protect it so that they can continue to make those decisions. I mean, I think we're doing so much of the right things. We just need more people doing it. And part of that is getting connected with the people in our local community, the people online, you know, doing everything we can to combat censorship and try to continue to push these messages out. You know, Jim, me, you, Bailey, Mo, John, all of us can continue to write these legislators. And if they're not doing anything about it right now, then maybe a little bit more public pressure will help them do that. And we only do that by continuing to share these messages and these goals out and encourage other people to.
It just started to pour rain here. You may lose me in the next minute or so.
I could hear it. It sounds like it's storming.
It was
the windows. Well, let me tell you guys what I'm doing.
Morning.
As we speak, real time, I am tweeting Governor DeSantis and LaDapo on Twitter. And I do this in real time. And I call these guys out. I've only got 4,000 followers on Twitter, but I've got 40,000 on YouTube.
They have
but
friends.
I'm followed by, I've got big name friends, right? I'm followed by Lara Logan. I know that Laura Ingraham watches what I do. So when I put this stuff out,
see, it's John. We only got a minute left, but this is perfect. If we could get Laura Logan I forgot her name. You just mentioned it. The other person,
Laura Ingraham and Lara Logan.
Lauras, yeah,
Lara Logan.
Either one doesn't matter. But both of them, ideally. But see, that would bridge the gap. Then if you get one major story, there is a solution to the vaccine problem.
Well, Dr. Drew.
We have a bill.
Dr. Drew.
Perfect.
So Dr. Drew pounced on one of my tweets yesterday.
Okay.
Right. So that's why I'm on Twitter confronting them in public. So in other words, when I post, I'm about to post this now. It says, even though Florida has over 70,000 dead with COVID-19, only 25 kids have died that are under 5.
Yeah.
All right.
But if you can talk to these folks and just post the bills, Tiffany's bills, Bailey and Mo, the bills that they've got and the big ones, the big ones, vaccine product liability. The end of big tech censorship, and just those two would be enough. But then, for people that want to know a little bit more, the EUA bill would be good for like a Dr. Drew. He would understand that one. Laura, who's been dealing, and both the Lauras who've been dealing with this issue, at a more sophisticated level, they would know it too. But if you can tweet those and say, here's the solution, and call those doctors directly and say, read this. What do you think? Can you get this to your audiences? That's how this works. And then hopefully we'll have something to report to Jim next week, so he'll feel a little more encouraged. Doesn't take a lot of good news to get people
real
optimistic, but there's no good news right now. That's the problem. John, let me give you the last word, and then we have to go.
No, I'm finding that doing this stuff in Twitter gets eyes on it, right? So people see it, and I just continue. I'm relentless. I send stuff to LaDapo. I send stuff to DeSantis, all the different governors, the Congress people. And this idea of taking the legislation and putting it in Twitter. And saying, what's wrong with this legislation? Why will you not back this? Tell us what words we need to change. Right?
Well, I don't know about that.
How close is this to perfect? Right? How close is this wording to perfect?
Well, they're
going
to amend it
anyway. What words do we need? Yeah.
I would ask them to submit it to their legislators. And then let them, because they're going to adapt the language anyway, and then we'll see what comes out of there. That's going to happen anyway. Yeah. So I'm not going to give them the option ahead of time because they're going to do it. But just say, why can't you adopt this legislation? Why can't you submit this to committee? Why can't you study this? Why can't you take a look at it? Here's your answer. And it's so simple.
Yeah.
Everybody
who's
read it is
going
to go, this is great. And then they're going to be shamed into at least putting it into committee. Oh, okay, we'll put it into committee. And of course, then our object is, well, how come it's still in committee? You know how this works. We have to go. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. This has been fun. John Bailey, Jim, Tiffany, Brian, Mo, you folks are amazing. And of course, anybody, Bailey and Mo, you're new to the show. Come on back anytime. We do this every Thursday. I'd love to
have
you.
Thank you so much.
Especially even if you have like a 5-minute legislative update, just call us back and just join the panel wherever we are.
We would love that.
Thank you so much. We'll love it.
Thanks everybody. And so concludes our 7th. World's Greatest Doctors panel with special guests. And I'm Greg Penglis, and this is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, Action Radio. Our legislative website, once again, is www.writeyourlaws.com. And I'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's our early day. It's Friday. So we're going to start at 6 in the morning Central Time. We have our Second Amendment and financial reports, and we have a lot to talk about on both those things. So thanks to our panel. Obviously, we're going to do this again. this is way too important, and I think the potential for what we talked about here is staggering once we get it all organized and in action. All right.